about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
Warning. What you are about to witness are stunts performed by experienced professionals. Do not try this at home.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
That record, I love that song.
You know, sometimes to get perspective, I like to think about a spaceman on a star incredibly far away, and our problems don't matter to him because we're just a distant point of light. But he feels sorry for me because he has an incredibly powerful microscope and he can see my face.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
Open wide for Chunky.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
You removed the fun. Thanks a lot.
Roll another one.
Tony.
Dan. Zahn.
Just like the other one.
Have you ever tried the fudge sprinkler?
This one seems to be about to quit.
Like the beaver had quite a day.
I need another
game. It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine. It's our time to shine.
Let's shine.
It's our time to shine.
Let's shine,
Dixie.
Your station has a lot of problems.
Roll another one.
I love Jesus, but I drink a little.
Just like.
Yeah, right.
This one seems to be
about to end. What are you talking about?
I don't have another cent.
It's just so habitual now that it almost seems like just habit.
What about the dogs? No respect for the dogs?
Just passing around.
I'm going to need to change my pants.
There we go. All right. Good sound.
I'm just passing.
And now.
Time. Too sexable for my shirt. Too sexable for my shirt. Too sexable for my shirt.
Our feature presentation.
I stand by that word.
Sexable?
Sexable.
It's a good word.
I'm disappointed it did not catch on. I think you introduced it to the language, and the least we could do is keep it alive.
It may have started as an accident, but I think it works.
Many good things start that way.
That's correct, Lisa. Thank
exactly.
You.
Look at my little brother, for instance.
Good morning,
accident.
Good morning, everybody. It's a brand new Kevin and Bean show. It's Friday morning.
Finally Friday.
Yes.
And a three-day weekend for lots of people.
That's right.
Muggs, what are you going to do with Monday off?
I don't have Monday off.
That felt good.
Oh, how dare you?
See, because Muggs is going to be running the best of Kevin and Bean on the holidays.
Yes.
So. One guy of the entire show who doesn't have to come in.
One guy in this building. That's it.
He's the only one.
Love it.
Yep. All right. We have a ridiculously packed show today. I feel like we're already running late if we're going to try to get everything in today. It's insane how much we're going to try to cram in between now and 10. But let me start with this story. This is the latest story, and you see these all the time. In fact, did you know that there, according to the University of Chicago, there are 1,500 patients a year in the United States that have surgical objects accidentally left inside them after surgery?
No, 1,500 a year?
Yes!
Just in the U.S.?
Yes!
I thought they had this whole system now where they count everything they use, the sponges, everything.
A lot of hospitals are trying to do that, try to account for all the items. They're talking, they put chips in some things. They use equipment that has special strips that clears, that shows up in x-rays. I mean, they're doing what they can. I mean, you would think that this was the type of thing that would happen like twice a year in
right.
the United States, right? 1,500 times a year. This story that's in the news is in Germany. A hospital is being sued. His lawyers, well, he's dead now. His lawyers say that up to 16 objects were left in their client's body after an operation for prostate cancer.
16?
Isn't that all they use?
You're trying at that point.
A needle, compresses, surgical strips, 16 different items.
A nurse?
And Germany. Anyone see keys?
It is Germany.
It is, of course, it's Germany. If it's not Florida, it has to be Germany. In Germany, they must not understand, or they must have a different system than we do for lawsuits here, because the family is only suing for $106,000.
Wow.
The hospital, by the way, rejects the claim, saying the objects could not have been left in the patient's body during the operation because the equipment wasn't in use at the hospital. So it sounds to me like they're suggesting that the items were left somewhere else. Now, wouldn't the patient know that if they had a surgery someplace? Again, what's my biggest complaint about all newspaper
articles? Not enough
information. I would like some clarification on that.
Bean's the only one that can read a 15,000-word article and go, I have more questions.
This article also goes on to give a little backstory on the problem. In December of 2011, a man in Ohio had two towels left in his body after surgery. He won $275,000 at a settlement. California regulators in August of 2012 fined a hospital in Fresno $50,000 for leaving a towel in a patient after an abdominal surgery.
I wonder how you figure that out. Like, what happens to you? And then you go, all right, something is wrong.
And the trail
it takes you to realize that someone left a towel inside you.
I think it's tough. Something like a towel that's probably not, that might not show up on an x-ray. I think it would be tough to figure out. Maybe your wounds aren't healing properly. I don't know. I don't know what
it
would
must
happen.
Must be tiny little towels. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, not like a beach towel.
Right.
Somehow I think you can keep track of that.
September of last year in Australia, a patient required a second operation after a surgical instrument was left in his abdomen. The Czech Republic had a guy who had a foot-long metal tube. I'm sorry, a woman. A foot-long metal tube left in the woman's abdomen for 5 months after surgery.
Wow.
A foot long?
A foot long.
That's crazy.
And the last one on the list is a Kentucky jury awarded a woman $2.5 million after she required surgery to remove a sponge left inside her after her hysterectomy 3 years earlier. Part of her small intestine had to be removed.
Wow.
Which I don't think is that big a deal, because I think you have, you know, like 5 times more intestine than you need. But I'm sure it was uncomfortable and no fun. But $2.5 million for that.
Man,
so,
man.
Anesthesia, you know, that when I had my surgery in November, I was not at all worried about the surgery, but I was worried about the anesthesia. And there's another story in the news this week about a trial going on in New York where an anesthesiologist, speaking of surgery, was sexually assaulting his ladies that were under during surgery. You know, if you've ever seen a surgery, the anesthesiologist is down at the head of the patient.
Yeah.
And then there's like a big, screen or something like that. And then the surgeons are working on the other end, if it's in the abdomen or in the stomach or something like that.
Right.
Like my surgery was. And he was having his way with the ladies on his side of the operating room.
Ew.
During the surgery.
In the same room.
In the same room.
While they're working.
Yes.
That's unbelievable.
Unzipping the whole deal.
How do you like this?
What?
Because the women were out. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So I'm just saying, I'm not getting any surgery today. This is too much.
Hey, those of you that are looking forward to having surgery either today or in the near future, good luck with that. Good luck with that. Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
You used to be such a good drunk. Now you're just disgusting. Thanks. And bloated and smelly.
Thanks. Lance Armstrong?
Yes.
From the Oprah Show last night? Admitted pretty much to everything. Including World War II. I didn't know that was his fault. But.
Really?
Wow. We have a comedian Eddie Pence on the program today.
Mm-hmm.
We have the movie beat because it is Friday. We have one of the stars of Broken City, Mark Wahlberg, on the program today.
Rob's son.
We have Cousin Sal talking about the NFL weekend. We have LaQuisha talking about Buck Wild.
Bless her heart.
We have Muse tickets. You're going to have to earn them with Lake Lisa today.
Mm-hmm.
We have Joshua Jackson from Fringe. Talking about tonight's series finale.
Aww.
This is it. It's going away forever after tonight. Kind of a bummer. And we have Kevin Bacon talking about a new show that looks fantastic called The Following.
That's too much.
So that's coming up as well today. We'll take a break and come back with the Showbiz Beat next.
I know we're going to hear highlights from the Lance Armstrong interview with Oprah Winfrey last night, Kevin.
Yeah.
But tell me why, if you would, it took 90 minutes for that interview. And it's only part one. Tell me why that is.
Yeah, it was an hour and a half. And there's part two is tonight.
Yeah.
She was
Oprah's a journalist. She asked the important questions.
Sure, of course. They couldn't have edited it down.
No
That's
way.
Not a possibility.
No.
She asked what she did last night was she asked a lot of questions about the doping and how it worked and his relationship with other racers and stuff. And
how does your doping work?
And I guess tonight it's his sponsors that he lost, money he lost, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I don't know. Why does it take 3 hours? I don't have any idea.
Could you interview anyone for 3 hours?
You know that. I'm 3 minutes is my limit.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to what Mr. Armstrong had to say coming up right after the top of the hour. First, though, Ralph's got our very first look at the showbiz beat here on a Friday.
Lance Arm Week. That's what I call him,
Yeah.
He didn't have the intestinal fortitude, man, to stand up to dope.
All right.
Yeah.
I hate everyone this week. I hate Lance Armstrong. I hate Manti Te'o. I hate everyone who covers stories. I hate news. I'm saturated. I'm full up. I'm up to here in BS this week. Everybody's just a lying douchebag. You know who wasn't a lying douchebag? Dear Abby. She gave it straight, man. She gave it straight.
Okay.
You had a problem? You write to Dear Abby? Dear Abby, I'm afraid my husband's cheating on me. I find hotel receipts, but I don't know if I should follow him or just believe him when he lies to me. Signed, Frazzled in Fresno. And she would set you straight, Dear Abby would. But no longer.
Now why do you bring her up?
Now Dear Abby's only response is, Dear Frazzled in Fresno, I'm dead.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, she passed away. The age of 94 this week. Not a bad run. She started writing the column in 1956.
Oh my God.
At one time, in her nearly 50 years of writing the column, she had a daily readership of 100 million people.
Wow.
That's all over. Still, a column's still going on, though. Her daughter, apparently, is still writing. People still writing Dear Abby for advice, and it's become sort of a cultural touchstone. The whole Dear Abby concept. You call someone a Dear Abby means they're giving out advice to people.
Nobody reads newspapers anymore.
Yeah, it's probably online, I'm sure. But
it must sound very quaint to people to think that you used to actually write a letter, a handwritten letter,
yes,
or type it,
right,
and send it through the mail, and then somebody would publish a response,
right,
in the newspaper.
They would read it, and weeks later, you check that column every day. You would check the column to see if your letter would be answered by Dear Abby.
Who would give you some
common sense advice.
Millions of people.
Who would do that?
Millions of people.
Bean's got a point.
Over decades.
Millions of people. Because some people, Kevin, are desperate for help, and they don't have friends or family to turn to, and this was a comforting voice in the darkness.
Huh. And she developed a reputation as being a smart person who was able to, you know, to boil down complicated problems to offer you a simple solution.
Yeah. Come on, Kevin. Why do you hate help?
Why do you hate help?
You hate help.
I love help.
You don't.
Why does Kevin hate help?
I'm a help lover.
You know who could use some advice from Dear Abby? Poor Taylor Swift.
Oh, poor, good. What happened to her?
Poor Tadoff Swindler is suffering from a seriously broken heart, friends.
Oh, she should have put out.
She is currently sending her ex-boyfriend Harry Styles text messages begging him to take her back. This according to PerezHilton.com. Apparently, Tadoff is a wreck, but Harry's not biting. Friends of Harry say he refuses to answer her calls and texts because he thinks she's just too emotional. The more and more I learn about this broad, the more I think she's just off her nut.
Yeah, she's off her rocker.
She just must be a pain in the ass to deal with.
And then she turns around and writes horrible songs about the dude.
And makes millions of dollars
off
you.
Like
it's their fault. Yeah.
She's
evil.
The worst. She is. She's the devil.
She's the devil's daughter. Kim Kardashian. I'm sorry. Porn star Kim Kardashian swears that her firstborn child with Kanye West will not be in the public eye, she says.
Oh! All right, Lance Armstrong, thanks.
She says they haven't decided on a name for their little baby, boy or girl. But she said, we probably won't be announcing it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure they will keep it very secret.
Well, that's what they're known for.
Yes, they like to have all of their private life just behind a curtain of secrecy so that they can enjoy the privacy.
Very low-key.
Kim Kardashian's a lot like Jodie Foster in that way. They just want to be left alone.
That's
just,
right.
Just give me my privacy. Oh, I forgot. E's going to have a camera in between her legs when she gives birth. Stop it. Stop it, Kim Kardashian.
How long after that kid is born are they going to figure out a way to prop him up with some product in his hand for its first commercial?
Oh, sure.
A week.
Baby Takes Miami will be the first series. It's just an infant laying in a stroller in South Beach for an hour.
On a bunch of hot chicks walking by.
That's right. And here's your Broadway update. You know, I love to give you the Broadway update on Fridays.
I did not know that.
Oh, sure. It's been a longstanding tradition here in the Kevin and Bean Show.
Nor do we need it.
Broadway update.
Go ahead.
Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, yes, we do then.
Opened on Broadway last night in Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. One of the most coveted roles for an actress in the pantheon of theater, I think. Women loved to play that role. Made famous, of course, in film by Elizabeth Taylor. Played by many talented actresses on stage. And the reviews, surprisingly, have been largely positive.
Huh.
New York Times said, Johansson confirms her promise as a stage actress of imposing presence and adventurous intelligence. That's from the New York Times.
Hmm. Yeah, but they said Joe Schmo was the best TV show ever.
How dare you, sir?
How can you trust
them? They didn't say the best TV show ever. They merely called it a classic.
Okay.
That's all they did. The London Telegraph, their review is a little bit more up our alley, I think. It is Johansson who spends much of the first act in the play dressed in nothing but a slip, who the audiences will flock to see,
right,
and they will not be disappointed.
All right.
The London Telegraph.
All right, then. So, that's good enough.
I'd like to see Scarlett Johansson walk around in her underwear for the first half of the play.
Sure.
I think she has been good in some movies,
yes,
not so good in others.
I agree.
Very spotty career.
Apparently doing well. Doing well in this one. And this comes as fascinating and exciting news for me, a person who enjoys both of these bands. What an interesting mix. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band is touring Australia in March. However, their longtime guitarist in the E Street Band, Stevie Van Zandt, Little Stevie, you know him from The Sopranos,
sure,
as well as the band. He's going to be filming his new TV series, Lilyhammer, so he's not available for the tour.
Okay.
So, you know who they're going to get to play guitar in the E Street Band in Australia?
Tom Morello.
Tom Morello! How cool is that?
That's very cool.
Imagine you go to see Springsteen in the E Street Band, and then you also get to see Tom Morello shred.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's a good night at the Orpheum right there.
I have a clip from the last time Tom was on stage. We're just down in Anaheim with the Springsteen Band. If you guys want to hear what that sounds like,
please. Sure.
Balls.
That's not
balls. Kind of a different sound for the E Street Band with Morello up there.
That's my favorite Bruce Springsteen song.
Is it really?
Oh yeah.
Balls. I like the acoustic slower version off the Tom Joad album. Today's celebrity birthdays: actor director Kevin Costner celebrates his 58th birthday today. Hilarious comedian Dave Attell is 48. Jonathan Davis of Korn, an Orange County resident, boy lives right here in our neck of our woods. 42 years old today. Can I hear Kevin's Jonathan Davis impression? Can we get that up at some
next
time?
Hour? We'll bring
next,
that
next
to you.
Hour. Okay. Jay Chou, who of course played Cato in The Green Hornet with Seth Rogen, he's 34 years old today. And Jason Segel from How I Met Your Mother and Freaks and Geeks and all his many feature films, 33 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Here's Arnold Schwarzenegger's new movie, The Last Stand, worth checking out this weekend. Ralph reviews it in the Movie Beat coming up, plus actor Mark Wahlberg in just a few minutes. And don't forget, throughout the day today, we not only have your tickets to go see Muse in concert at Staples Center next week, we're also going to hook you up on the standby boarding list just after 9 o'clock to see the band in Paris. It's destination number 2 of the K-Rock World Tour 2013. Details at KRock.com.
So I'm going to bring in highlights of Lance Armstrong today, and I try to go to the OWN network, and my TiVo goes, "Are you sure?" And I go,
yeah.
Are you positive? It's like, yeah, go ahead. Go to OWN network.
Kevin, are you feeling okay? The DVR is asking you?
Exactly. Wait, is this Kevin's wife? I can't quite see. So I go to the OWN network, and it's Oprah, and it's Lance Armstrong. And she starts off by saying that there are no questions that she's not allowed to ask, and he agrees.
Okay.
You can ask anything you want. I'll answer anything you want.
Excellent.
Who knew it was such a complex system of cheating? Unbelievable. Here, Oprah starts by explaining some of what they did to cheat in the Tour de France.
According to USADA, they devised a systematic doping ring in several countries that ran nearly undetected for close to a decade. Reports say private jets flew some team members to Spain for secret blood transfusions. Payments were transferred through Swiss bank accounts. Banned substances were smuggled across international borders. Blood was stored in hidden refrigerators in preparation for blood doping.
It was not a little bit of doping.
No.
I heard this guy who's known Lance since before he started cycling
professionally, who has worked with him for 20 years. I think he provided him with bikes and stuff. And Lance actually lived with him for a little while when he first started. And he was saying that once he decided, this is his view, once Lance decided to do it, he was going to do it better than anybody.
He did.
And as everything else, be the best at it and make it the most complete system he could.
Yep. And no one could test it. They couldn't figure it out. But they didn't even have tests in the beginning in like 95 when he was doing it. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have tests for some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So then they went back and tested his, they saved blood samples from all of these writers, you know, iced them.
Right.
And they went back and tested his and it was just off the charts.
It was like glowing all different colors.
Yeah, it was just crazy. So here comes a bunch of yes or no questions.
Yes or no? Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
All right. There's one yes. He took them. All right, good.
Yes or no? Was one of those banned substances EPO?
Yes.
Okay, two.
Did you ever blood dope or use blood transfusions to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Okay, three.
Wow. Ding, ding, ding.
There's no no's. It's unbelievable. Like, she just asked question after question. What they would do is they would store their own blood that's clean. And then before they would go ride or whatever, they would give themselves a blood transfusion with their own blood that was clean so that when they got tested, it wouldn't show up.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it was really
so elaborate.
A complex system.
Did you ever use any other banned substances like testosterone, cortisone, or human growth hormone?
Yes.
Is there anything you didn't use? It's unbelievable, all of the different things. So then she asked him about – he won the Tour de France 7 years.
Seven times in a row, yeah.
And she wanted to know if he was doping through all of them, some of them.
In all seven of your Tour de France victories, did you ever take banned substances or blood dope?
Yes.
Yes. She should have just
that
put
was
all
– That a poorly asked question, but
– It was, yeah. But he understood what she was talking about. And the answer to every question was yes. He did everything anyone thought.
I don't get – remember when he said, but after I had cancer, are you kidding me? You think I would do that to my body? I don't even
– Okay. That's the only thing that he said was during his comeback after cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was 2005. And then he came back in 2009 and got third place. Or 2010 and 2011 got 23rd place. He said then he didn't.
Before that. But losing is not okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
But all before that, he absolutely did. So Oprah asks about his treatment of some of the other riders because Lance Armstrong was a dick.
He iced him out.
He would ice him out. He would yell at him. He would sue people who said things against him. I mean, he was a dick.
People who were speaking the truth,
yes.
He would come down against. And this is what, and this is where a lot of people have really turned on Lance. People, I think, are more willing to forgive him for using drugs in a sport where everyone was using drugs to try to stay competitive. I think people understand that mindset from an athlete. People don't understand you try to destroy everyone's life that is speaking the truth and trying to expose the downside of the sport. That's what has really turned a lot of folks off on Lance.
So she asked Lance,
"Were you a bully?"
Yeah, I was a bully.
He was like the freaking mafia. He practically take people out if they tell anybody anything.
Now, here's where it gets sort of weird. Now she goes back and says, what were your mindset at the time? While you were doing it, what did you think?
Was it a big deal to you? Did it feel wrong?
At the time?
Mm-hmm.
No.
It did not even feel wrong?
No.
How about that? Didn't feel wrong at all.
Because
it was all good.
Why?
Well, because everyone was doing it.
Right.
So it didn't feel
like he just did it better.
I saw somebody in the discussion after this interview last night said that, for instance, the 2000 Tour de France race, the top nine players in that race, the top nine finishers, have all been implicated in doping by this point. You'd have to go to the 10th place guy to find someone and who knows if he was on or not, but he hasn't been implicated yet. That's how prevalent it was in his sport.
Did you feel bad about it?
No.
Did you feel in any way that you were cheating?
No.
No, he wasn't cheating.
By the way, if he chose, look, he could have gone to anyone to do this interview. Everybody wanted it. 60 Minutes, anyone. If he chose Oprah because he thought it was going to be a skate or a free ride, I think he must have been surprised because it sounds like she pretty much held his feet to the fire.
Yeah. And now she.
Don't you think she did a good job?
Yeah, I do. And now she gets to the part where you were just talking about how he would sue friends and sue people that were telling the truth.
You're suing people and you know that they're telling the truth. What is that?
It's a major flaw. And it's a guy who expected to get whatever he wanted and to control every outcome.
All right, so he was a bully, and he sued people that he knew were telling the truth.
It's a little insanity, but I wonder if when you're doping, I mean, it must affect your brain too, right?
I don't know. I think he was just on top of the world. He had won so much. Yeah. Everybody looked up to him. He was a hero.
Like, I'm a god.
Yeah, I'm a god, yeah. So apparently along the way, a masseuse that worked on those bikers during the race mm-hmm. came forward and said, you know, that this was happening. And Lance just destroyed her.
Emma O'Reilly. You actually, I watched the tape several times, sort of under your breath, but you implied the whore word. You used the whore word. How do you feel about that today?
Good?
Not good.
Not good. Okay.
It's hard for him even now to admit, like when they said, are you a bully? He's like, yeah, I was. It's really hard for him to admit any of this. I mean, he should say, yes, and I owe her such a giant apology.
Yeah. And you know what else kind of ruined it for me is that they showed the earlier tapes, like in 2005, 2004, when these stories were coming out. They showed him lying mm-hmm. and them saying, do you dope? Have you ever doped? And he said, no, 100% no. And I'm telling you, he was every bit as believable when lying as he was in the Oprah interview.
Yeah.
You can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
In other words, he could have been lying last night all he wanted. No one would know because he can sell it like nobody's business.
Hey, for sitting down with Oprah for an interview, do you get a new car or a trip to Australia?
I don't believe so.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And then Oprah asked him,
I made my decisions. They are my mistake.
Sorry, this is what he's saying. He's trying to take full responsibility for it.
And I'm sitting here today to acknowledge that and to say I'm sorry for that.
And he thinks he's going to have to do it for the rest of his life. He's not surprised that everyone doesn't believe him. And he is going to...
Look, here's where Lance Armstrong is going to be in 3 to 5 years, maybe even less than that. He's an inspirational figure. He already is a hero because of how hard he worked to beat cancer, how hard he worked to be at the top of the cycling game. Now he's just going to have something else on his resume, how hard he worked to recover from scandal.
He's going to be
a hero all over again because he's going to have fought his way back and done everything he could to get back into the good graces of people, and people will love him again.
Yeah, he's going to go through hell, and then people will forgive him. And
people will respect him. Yeah. People will respect him because he came clean and worked hard to repair his reputation.
And then in the end...
Does my butt look big?
Yes.
Yes, so that happened. I don't know why she even asked that.
Friday means a lot of things on the Kevin Bean Show, including Cousin Sal with a preview of the NFL weekend ahead. Also, LaQuisha will be along a little bit later on talking about Buck Wild and a little feature we like to call the Movie Beat.
In a world, someone has been watching. One man who risked everything.
Sorry, I have not seen any of your films.
Without seeing the movies. Ralph Garman's Movie Beat. Welcome to my world.
4 new movies in your theaters this weekend, Southern California. A little something for everybody. Let's say you're a huge fan of Common, and you're saying, where's my Common movie? Where's my movie starring Common?
Yesterday.
You're saying that to all your
friends? I heard Lisa say that, yeah.
Lisa was at her book club, and they were sipping jasmine tea, and she said, where's Common in the movies? I want to see more Common. Well, you get your wish today. It's called Love. It's exclusively in AMC theaters this weekend. That's where you can find it. Common plays an ex-convict. He's the uncle to an 11-year-old boy who idolizes him, and that boy gets a crash course in what it means to be a man when he spends the day with his uncle, the ex-con. Here's a scene where Common's talking to the little boy and telling him, don't you worry about a thing. I'm going to take care of you.
Your grandmother, she can't take care of you. I'm all you got.
If you're all I got, why you hit me and put me through all this today?
I ain't got nobody either. People I thought I trusted, man, I can't trust. I don't even know what they were doing. I don't know. I'm telling you, I don't know.
So why'd you say that about my mother?
I love your mother. I love you too, man. What? I love you, bro. I'm gonna take care of you.
Subtitled. I'm assuming that movie's subtitled. Check that out in AMC theaters this weekend. Mama!
Yeah!
Just killed a man.
Love it.
Mama's in theaters this weekend. Looks horrifying, terrifying. Everything that scares me in one movie, including scary little kids and ghost mamas in this film.
Ghost mamas are always scary.
Jessica Chastain plays a young woman who's faced with the challenge of raising her young nieces that were left alone in the forest for 5 years. How did they survive? Well, maybe
Mama was there after all. Here's a little scene where this creepy kid, just too creepy to live, keeps talking to Jessica Chastain and calling her something a little odd.
Mama. No, don't call me that. I'm not your mom. I'm Annabelle. You can call me that. Or Annie, or whatever you'd like. We could... we could work it out together, right?
Is that the wrong
thing? Yeah, go right into the
next
went
one. Into the next clip.
All right.
That's how scary it was. The machine got scared and just jumped to the next clip. Couldn't bear that clip anymore.
Let's get away from Mama.
Ah, Mama scared me. Let's get to Broken City. That's what comes out this weekend with Mark Wahlberg. My movie son, Mark Wahlberg. I like to call him my movie son. Nope, it's not it.
We have Last Stand next.
We have Last Stand. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Last Stand.
This is going well.
Let's jump to Last Stand.
All okay. Right.
Arnold Schwarzenegger plays a small town sheriff. Oh, sure he is. In Austria. No, apparently it's in America, this small town. And a drug kingpin is making his way through his town on the way to Mexican border. The only thing standing in his way? Arnold Schwarzenegger and his inexperienced deputy, played by Johnny Knoxville. I know, it sounds like a parody. I know it sounds like I'm playing Mad Libs, but this is a real movie and it exists. Schwarzenegger returns to the big screen as the sheriff. And here he is, diving through a window while being shot at by bad guys.
Clarence! Where's the fire coming from?
Behind you, roof next to the diner.
Cover me, guys.
Yes, sir!
How are you, Sheriff?
Old.
See, he's old!
See?
Arnold Schwarzenegger has the unique ability to make even the most remote, simple line sound completely unrealistic. It's fascinating to me. Where is the fire coming from? He can't even just ask where the fire's coming from. Cover me, guys. He can't say, cover me, guys. He can't get a three-word line out and make it sound like a human being. He's the biggest movie star in the world. Yeah. All right. And Broken City, lastly, Marky Mark plays an ex-cop who is double-crossed by the mayor of his town. Asked to do some things that are not above board and then turns it back on. And Wahlberg seeks revenge against the mayor, played by Russell Crowe. Here's Mark Wahlberg himself asking Russell, why'd you hire me?
I hired you to investigate my wife.
Investigate her for what?
For not minding your own business is for what? For having a big mouth is for what? For asking too many questions is for what? You better be careful following her example, Billy. I might have to hire someone to investigate you.
Yeah, you're good, man.
Perhaps that's why the people keep electing me, Billy. Because I simply get the job done.
So all this, it was all for the city?
Everything I do is for this great city. I chose you because I own you.
Cover me, guys! Mama! It's a mashup. My pick for the weekend's Broken City. I love me some Mark Wahlberg, my movie son, as I like to call him, Mark Wahlberg. Yeah.
And talk to him next.
Russell Crowe as well. That's my pick. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the movie beat.
All that you know is at an end.
That was Ralph Garman. Ralph Garman. Movie beat.
Ralph Garman in the Showbiz Beat, the Movie Beat a minute ago, was given his pick for the weekend. He said the one to see is Broken City because it's got my man Mark Wahlberg in it. Let's see if Mark Wahlberg agrees, or does he think we should go see the Schwarzenegger movie instead? Hi, Mark.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're good.
The Schwarzenegger movie looks pretty damn good.
It does look pretty damn good. It's kind of a tough choice. Hey, listen, we don't have you on nearly often enough because we're such big fans, but we got a lot of ground to cover, so let me get right to it.
First
of
all,
We're doing great. You've been busy. I know that. First of all, what was it like being there in person last night, seeing LeBron single-handedly dismantle the Lakers?
Oh, my gosh. You know, my kids are – they're big. My son has a LeBron backpack, so he was really excited about LeBron. Now, he likes Kobe, too, but those first couple of opening dunks, it was just like, oh, my God, it looked like a highlight reel.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. I thought you guys on VH1 the other day.
What is that noise?
Hello? What is that noise, Mark? Is that on your end?
No, what is it?
I don't know. We just heard we just heard a loud noise. So
I thought it was a goal. I thought somebody was scored a goal. How do you even go to a Laker game? You must be a Celtics fan, right? You must enjoy seeing the Lakers lose.
You know what? I love Kobe. You know, he's one of my favorite players. You know, I've gotten to know him over the years. Obviously, I am a Celtics fan, but you know, I'm a sports fan in general. So, you know, I was just good to go and hang out with my family, get my boys out on their own with me and their mom and. And you know, hopefully they'll turn it around. It's not going to be good if the Celtics and the Lakers aren't in playoffs.
Agreed. That's always the best.
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
Always the best rivalry. Well, you certainly saw a good game if your son is a LeBron fan. That was perfect.
He was incredible.
Yeah. Mark Wahlberg on the line. Of course, Broken City, as we mentioned, opens up everywhere today. It seems like you're in a place, Mark, where everything's going your way, kind of. You're being in so many different kinds of movies that are doing great. You must have your pick of scripts these days. Why'd you choose this one?
You know, this one was right after Fighter, and then I was doing Ted and wanted to try to find something different, and it was on The Blacklist, which is the best unproduced screenplays in Hollywood, and it just reminded me of those great crime thrillers that I grew up watching that are so rich in character and story. You know, we didn't have a lot of money to make the movie, but the script was so good, that's how we attracted the talents and the likes of Russell Crowe and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Jeffrey Wright, Barry Pepper, Kyle Chandler's in the movie. You know, it's just that good of a piece of material.
Is it? Does that happen a lot these days? Since you know, the economy has gone so bad, where there are many, many movie projects where you have to go to somebody and say, "Look, we don't have a big budget, but would you like to be in it?"
Yeah, and you know, you gotta have something good to attract them, and the material is really the thing that did that.
You know, I've seen you mention a couple times in interviews recently, Mr. Wahlberg, that your television production work kind of has taught you how to make things fast and make things on the cheap, because you're, you know, one of the guys, one of the suits behind Entourage and Boardwalk Empire and other shows. That has you've been able to turn those TV skills into helping you make movies. What does that mean? How does that work?
Yeah, well, you know what? Since, you know, the business has changed quite a bit, the studios are crying poverty because of DVD sales and different revenue streams that don't kind of, you know, generate the same kind of return that they used to. So a lot of filmmakers are kind of caught in the days of excess where you had all this extra money that you didn't really need.
Right.
So, you know, you use a smaller crew, you have less days and less time to shoot, but you just go out there and, you know, you just do it, you know, like a guerrilla filmmaking, and basically you take everybody who's, you know, taking less money and let them participate in the profits if the movie's a success.
Yeah, and that's the secret. If you make it cheap enough, it's almost certainly going to be profitable. I mean, let's face it. You know, like you said, you put together an all-star cast like this, people are going to want to go see it in the theater. What about Russell Crowe? He's a guy who doesn't seem like a very public person. In other words, I don't feel like we know him that much because he doesn't do quite as many interviews and whatnot. You know, what's that guy like in person to hang out with? Is he fun?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, look, he's a serious actor. The guy comes prepared. He cares. He's passionate about what he does. He wants things to be great. He expects everybody to work really hard, too. But sweetheart of a guy. Guy's guy. You guys would definitely love him.
Does he, like, joke around and stuff? Because I can't see that.
All the time.
Really?
You mentioned Ted a minute ago. Is it true that you are going to be part of the Oscar telecast with your friend Seth MacFarlane? Are you going to be on the show with Ted?
Yes. Yeah, Ted and I will be appearing, and fortunately for most of the people in the audience, Ted will be insulting everybody.
Oh, good.
Love it. Was that one of the great surprises of your career, that Ted ended up being one of the biggest movies of all time, Mark?
Absolutely. It was the surprise of my career, but I definitely felt confident in both the material and Seth's ability as a filmmaker. He's such a talent, and you know, it's crazy because it is the biggest original R-rated movie of all time.
That's insane. It really is when you think about all of the R-rated comedies that have been made.
It was over $500 million, and it's just opening, and it still has Japan to open actually today.
Wow. That's crazy. And Seth MacFarlane, by the way, I mean, I don't toss this word around. I really do believe that dude is a genius. That guy is one of the most talented people overall of anyone working in Hollywood today.
Absolutely. You know what the great thing about him is? He's also one of the sweetest, kindest, most generous guys.
We have met him, and he is great. Yeah. He's one of those guys you'd just love to go out and have a beer with and just hang out with.
You know what? And he just, you know, anything he asks me to do or say, or I'm there.
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg on the line in our remaining moments talking about his film called Broken City. It opens up everywhere today. The great director Alan Hughes, by the way, behind this one. Russell Crowe, as you mentioned. Catherine Zeta-Jones, fantastic cast. Hey, I wanted to ask you one Boardwalk Empire question, too, while we have you on, because I know that's your baby as well. Do you know that you accidentally left some of the characters alive in the most recent finale?
Yes.
You're aware of that. Okay.
The body count was already so high, it was like, was that not one of the great finales of all time, though?
Well, I'll tell you, it kept you on the edge of your seat wondering if anybody was going to be left for the next season. I mean, you talk about cutting budgets. You're just firing actors left and right with a machine gun.
you know, it is what it is. I remember the first season after, you know, when they were talking about Jimmy Dormady going, and I was saying, well, you can't kill Al Capone before his time.
Right,
you know,
right.
History, but any fictional characters, I just remind the guys to be on their best behavior.
Yeah, well, you were there.
You
certainly cleared the deck, Mark. Well, listen, it's always great to have you on the Kevin and Bean Show. Like I said, we're such huge fans of yours. We can't wait for Broken City and whatever's next, man. Thank you so much for the time today. We really enjoyed it.
Guys are the best. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Kind of a ridiculous Kevin and Bean Show today in that comedian Eddie Pence joins us next hour. We got Muse tickets you can win next hour. Kevin Bacon later on. LaQuisha on the program. Joshua Jackson from Fringe. It's too much goddamn show is what it is. Ralph is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat, too.
If you had a 25-year-old Victoria's Secret model girlfriend,
can I answer the question?
Yes.
Yes.
Would you do whatever it took to make her happy?
Yes.
What if that meant not drinking anymore?
No.
Aha! See? I knew I had Kevin. I knew I had him up against the wall.
Come on. You can only be expected to give up so much.
That's what Jason Statham is facing right now. Of course, his girlfriend is Rosie Huntington-Whiteley.
Yes.
You may remember her from Transformers 7. I think she was in the 7th one.
And all of Kevin's tweets.
And all of Kevin's tweets, yeah.
I'm not tweet picture of girl in boobies. Bra, go now.
By the way, Kevin,
boobies.
Kevin has become
doing the Lord's work.
The king of some sort of a soft porn empire on Twitter. Have you guys noticed?
Look, yeah. What this girl look like? Is it good? Yes. Hashtag boobies.
So every tweet Kevin sends out now.
When did you become Larry Flint instead of tweeting actual thoughts?
I'm just doing the Lord's work. That's it.
The world Lord's work?
You know, you heard me.
Jason Statham has ticked off his girlfriend. Apparently they were at a party recently and he got hammered. And she was furious, according to other partygoers.
Unless he was a complete a-hole. That's a deal breaker. I'm not with a woman like that.
Word is, she doesn't like it when he gets smashed. She doesn't enjoy that he's been enjoying lots of wild boys' nights out with his friends. And she is threatening to split if the partying doesn't stop. Jason, by the way, is 45 years old. Rosie is 25, as I mentioned.
But see, here's the difference between you and me, Ralph, when you ask that question if I would do it. Jason Statham will get another girl that's just as hot.
Yeah, it's true.
That's the difference, you know?
It's true. He's probably got a lot of choices.
Plus, if he doesn't like it, I'll put her in the trunk of my car and I'll take her for a drive.
Just waste her. That's all.
It may be time for revisiting one of our famous most successful topics. Bad tattoos. Tattoos you regret.
Love
tattoo
it.
Mistakes.
Love it.
Ashley Green of the legendary Twilight franchise got a new tattoo in her foot after wrapping up her movie Satanic in New Orleans. But she may want someone to go with her next time she gets a tattoo spell check her body art.
Oh, no.
She got the phrase, life's a dance, tattooed on her foot. Unfortunately, the phrase is missing an apostrophe. So it's life's a dance. It's like, it's plural of life is a dance. What does your foot mean exactly, Ashley? People will be asking. So once again, a little screw up makes a tattoo even more embarrassing. Barry Manilow is going to be on Broadway.
Tell me more.
Tell me less.
He is kicking off his Manilow on Broadway show next Thursday, January the 24th. It'll run through February the 23rd. It's only 1 month. But there's good news, Bean.
Tell me.
Barry has reserved a limited number of $20 Rush tickets for every performance.
Now, Rush is going to be there, too?
Doesn't mean you get to go see Rush, which would be much more enjoyable than sitting through Barry Manilow.
Not interested.
A Rush ticket is tickets they reserve there at the box office. So if you come up at the last minute and you want to go, if they've got any in stock, boom, be right there. You get a nice seat, and you for $20, you go see Barry Manilow.
No. What's the theme of this particular show on Broadway? Because, you know, he did like the love theme, and then he does the oldies, you know, where he plays the 60s and 70s songs. What's he doing this time, Ralph?
What could you how could you possibly think we care?
This theme is balls, 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 balls.
No!
Tribute to the gonad. And some TV news. TV news! Michael J. Fox is getting a new sitcom on NBC. We've heard about this for a while. It is based on his real life. He will play a husband and father of three in New York City, juggling the challenges of family and career while dealing with Parkinson's disease.
On the show, his job will be as a news anchor who decides to go back to work after a new medication helps him manage his Parkinson's. I think this is a bold experiment. I know. Look, I'm the first guy to trash NBC when they announce crap like they're going to give Jessica Simpson her own show. But this is a bold idea for a comedy. To have a guy who actually has Parkinson's play a guy with Parkinson's in a sitcom to mine comedy out of that situation, I think is a bold and refreshing step.
I agree.
I'm looking forward to it's checking
it out.
On
TV, you could see that.
You can see
television.
You'll see it on television. Yeah.
Same thing.
His co-star, they've just announced, will be Breaking Bad's Betsy Brandt. Will play his wife on that show. So she's super talented. Should be a good idea. And yes, okay, thank you, you're welcome, TNT.
What?
I'm just saying to TNT, the TNT network, they are welcome. For, they just announced their concept for a new pilot for Gina Davis, bringing her to television, which she will play a bounty hunter. Oh, I get it. Now, bounty hunters are popular on television. Oh, I understand. You want to ride my coattails? Feel free, TNT. Wow. Just have a good time with that. Enjoy. Gina Davis, apparently prepared for the role, is growing out her beard and lifting weights on a daily basis.
So, is that right?
Yeah. Looking forward to seeing that. Should be good. And Linda Lohan in the news.
Should we start calling her porn star Lindsay Lohan?
Well, not yet.
It's close.
She's right there on the precipice, but she hasn't quite fallen over yet. Lindsay has a new film coming out called The Canyons, in which she co-stars with actual porn star James Dean. He did an interview with the DailyBeast.com talking about her four-way sex scene that she had to film for that motion picture and how uncomfortable it made her. You'd think, with all the experience Lindsay Lohan has, that she'd be very comfortable. But apparently, according to James, she wasn't. She had never done a sex scene. So to her, this was a big deal, since she was showing her boobs and simulating sex. Everyone else on the set was so relaxed about it, because it was James and two other porn actors
who were
playing the other people. Yeah, he says that she felt like she needed to throw some drama in there and bring attention back to her.
Oh, no.
Yeah. While she was half naked with two completely naked co-stars in bed, she suddenly made them put their robes back on because she was really uncomfortable. But she was still topless.
What?
When they asked her about that, she was like, no, I can be naked, but you can't.
What?
Yeah, apparently giving...
Doesn't it usually opposite? The girl doesn't want to be naked, but she doesn't care if the guy is.
She was uncomfortable it was a guy and a girl, that they were naked, but she could be naked, and it was fine, but she was comfortable with them being naked.
Huh.
Because maybe not enough tension was being directed towards her.
I guess so.
James continues in the interview. Everyone on the set was like, we've all seen you in Playboy. We've seen crotch shots all over the internet, so this is nothing new. But for her, it was different. And he does confirm that the 66-year-old director, Paul Schrader, of the film, did have to strip down in order to get Lindsay to come out of the closet and perform the scene.
That's the craziest part of the whole story.
Yeah.
It's the best part.
Yeah.
Like, he thought that she was uncomfortable being naked, so he tried to put her at ease by him being naked.
Right.
She was locking herself in her dressing room until he did.
Right.
Yeah.
Having an old man on the set butt naked, how does that relax you?
Say that again. That sounded good.
Nuh-uh, you do it. If I have to do it, you do
it. Well, she didn't insist. He did it. It's like that was a last-ditch effort. He's like, look at me. I'm naked, too. We're all going to be naked. It's fun, Lindsay. Take that robe off. Come on, girl. Come to daddy.
I was with you till come to daddy.
Apparently it was somehow.
And it just got creepy.
We got naked and everybody simulated sex and it was a good time had by all. Listen, here's the thing. Here, you want to get Lindsay Lohan out of a closet? You get yourself an 8-ball. You start the trail of cocaine at the closet door. You trail it from the closet to the set onto the bed where you want her to go.
And that will work.
That's alleged.
Allegedly.
You treat her like you would Lassie or Benji or any other trained dog. You just take treats and you just use the treats to coax the animal into a happy state and gets them to where you want to go. It's an age-old Hollywood trick, for God's sakes. Then you cover the co-stars in cocaine.
Ow.
And then she'll be all over them. I should be a director.
I
know how Hollywood works.
Then, like with Mr. Ed, they put peanut butter in her mouth so they can have another actress dub in her,
right, yes.
Her lines later.
She's going to move her lips, and then you just have Cloris Leachman come in and deliver the lines. Cloris needs work, too, Kevin. What's the matter with you?
She's 100.
It's just a voice!
I know, but a 100-year-old voice!
Today's celebrity birthdays. I'm trying to think of someone who sounds like Lindsay, because Lindsay's voice is way down here. So I picked Cloris Leachman. Just stand down, sailor.
Khloe Kardashian.
Celebrity birthdays today. Actor-director Kevin Costner is 58. That's a guy who knows something about getting somebody out of a trailer with cocaine. He's a real director.
Allegedly.
Comedian Dave Attell is 48 years old. Jay Chou played Kato in The Green Hornet, very popular pop star overseas as well. 34 years old today. Jason Segel from How I Met Your Mother and Freaks and Geeks. And, of course, his many motion pictures turns 33. And Jonathan Davis of Korn, local Orange County resident, lives here. Maybe you might be listening to the show right now. Jonathan, if you are listening, happy birthday, 42nd birthday. And in tribute to you, Jonathan Davis, we have our buddy Kevin Ryder of The Kevin and Bean Show doing his legendary Jonathan Davis of Korn impression.
Well,
you're welcome. Gentlemen. Thank you all. The comedy stylings of Kevin Ryder. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show.
Joshua Jackson joins us later on today talking about this season series all-time finale of Fringe tonight on Fox. Kevin, you're very sad, actually.
Yeah,
about that.
Yeah. The show's going away.
Also, Kevin Bacon's got a new show called The Following. That's on the way. And Cousin Sal talks NFL football. That's all next hour. Right now, the least famous guest in the history of the Kevin and Bean Show, ladies and gentlemen. Please put your hands together for comedian, I'm assuming, Eddie Pence.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Eddie.
How about that great intro?
That was great. I was just in here cleaning the urinals, and you guys were like, hey, we need someone to fill time.
Eddie is going to be at the Lovitz, which is one of our favorite comedy hangouts, Saturday night at 10 o'clock. Tickets available for just $15. Eddie, the reason I say that, and I mean no disrespect whatsoever, although...
None taken at all.
No, I know. I'm going to try to turn this into a compliment. I was doing a little bit of research on you last night, and I don't think you even have a Wikipedia page.
I actually tried to make my own, and it was like, oh, this is a lot of work. I'm not going to do this.
It's really hard to find a person without a Wikipedia page.
Yeah,
I mean, my mom has a Wikipedia page. She's not even famous. I mean, it's just, how did that happen? Like, isn't there one crazy Eddie Pence fan who says, oh, I love this dude, I'm going to put it up?
I don't know. If you Google me, I'm like 20 pages deep on Google.
Yeah.
But there's no Wikipedia page. There's a lot of work into a Wikipedia page.
If you don't mind my just taking a break and going on a tangent.
Yeah.
Bean, that was your attempt to turn it into a compliment? Was to say that he doesn't have a Wikipedia page?
No, what I'm saying is I was trying to justify my remarks about how he might be the least famous person, not only that we've ever had on the show, but maybe in the world. I mean, there are little kids in India who have a Wikipedia page.
So you base everything around who has a Wikipedia page or not?
Well,
like
I'm just saying
that justifies a human being.
He does, yes.
I'm just saying it's a start. That's all.
I'm going to spend all weekend making a Wikipedia page.
You're a young, good-looking guy who has a strong following in comedy. I can't believe you don't have at least some fat chick who stalks you who would put a page
in. I have a lot of lazy fans.
That must be it.
They just really don't want to put the time into
Are they high a lot?
Page.
Is that the problem?
They must be high, or they don't really care that much.
Yeah.
Right. Tell us a little bit about you for folks who maybe don't know, haven't seen you on the TV or whatever. How'd you get started in comedy?
Originally from Virginia. I moved out here like 15 years ago and just
started. Was it to just be a star, to be a comedian?
I moved out here for film school.
Film school,
and I started acting in other people's films, and I was like, I always wanted to do stand-up, so I just started doing it. And
what was the first time like? Where'd you do it?
Comedy Store Belly Room. Okay. Was the first time. I actually have it on tape.
And you got up in front of the crowd.
Yeah,
and
I actually had my first time ever on tape.
That's so cool.
Was it?
Not really. It's really horrible.
Right?
Was it brutal?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did toilet paper jokes.
And no one, it doesn't matter what topic it is if they laugh.
Yeah,
but
well, they
if
laugh.
They don't laugh. That's even worse.
I did something about French tickler toilet paper. It was just really. That's all I can remember. It's a blur, and that's all I remember from it. It's just, and I haven't watched the tape since.
Well, we would like you to send a copy of the tape over.
Absolutely, I'm going to post it on my Wikipedia page.
I understand it's one of the most difficult fields in the world to get good at. I mean, not just break into, but get good at. How long did it take you before you actually seriously thought, hey, I'm good enough to make this a career?
About 7 years.
About six, 7 years.
It's one of the few professions in the world where you have to get to the point where you don't care if you're good.
And that's the key.
And that's when you get good.
Huh.
When you get up there, you're like, I don't care if I make these people laugh. I'm just going to be up here and have fun for myself. And that's when you get good. It's really the weirdest profession.
So you got to be beaten. You got
to
be like...
You have to break yourself.
On the verge of suicide.
Yeah. And then you get up there and then you just...
And you kill.
Yeah. And then so people start laughing. You're like, oh my God, this is where I have to be. Ugh, why did I choose this?
And really, you just need one legitimate laugh in your set to give you enough hope to come back the next night, right?
No. Once you get to, like, you've been doing it as long as I've been doing it, it's like you get to the point where, like, even if they laugh, you're like, oh, I don't care.
You don't, wait, you don't care if they
People
laugh?
Get off stage and you're like, oh my God, that was a great set. You're like, oh, thanks. I'm just going to go on.
Really?
It's just your therapy? Yeah, just, is that what
just,
it is?
Yeah, right? I guess it's just, and but the thing is, it's like, if you don't go up and you don't do it, then you feel bad. But when you do go up and you do it, you get down and you're like, ugh.
But because you're not,
it's really
because
it's
you're not
a
happy.
Horrible profession. Don't anyone ever do it.
Is it because you're not happy with your performance? No matter what, because
you start nitpicking. Even when people are laughing, they're just like, you find little things. You're like, I could have done that better. Why didn't I work on this joke a little bit more? Or tweak that a little bit better. But other people, it's stuff people don't see. But you just done it so much. You just
Well, you probably saw that Jerry Seinfeld interview in the New York Times a couple weeks ago, where even a master comedian like him, with decades of success, he still agonizes over what order to put some of the words in. You know, which is amazing.
Like, and starting is the hardest part. Just picking up the microphone, the first thing out of your mouth, like you ag, like you can never figure that out. Like that is, every time it's different. You're just trying to figure out, like, what, how do I open up? What
you mean even now?
Even now, you just walk in and be like, hey, everybody, like, how am I doing? Oh, why did I say how am I doing?
You might be too self-critical.
Yeah, it's just like, I'm sorry I started that way, people.
I apologize for that.
Eddie, in those lean years, this is the voice of comedian Eddie Pence here on the Kevin DeBean Show, performing at the Lovitz tomorrow night at 10, thelovitz.com. In those lean years, what kinds of What kinds of day jobs did you have to support yourself in Hollywood trying to make it
comedy? I was a horrible bartender for years.
Horrible?
Horrible bartender. Okay. To the point where they actually they cut me down to a Tuesday lunch.
Wow!
Because they liked me so much, they didn't want to fire me, but they kept shrinking my schedule to the point where I'm like, you know what? I can't do Tuesday lunches anymore. I have to quit because I'm making $20.
That hurts.
I didn't realize that it works the same way with bartenders as it does with the ugly strippers, is they give you the Tuesday lunchtime.
They keep shrinking. Yeah, you're coming in on Wednesday 7 a.m. to 8:30.
All right, we're so bartending. What else did you do?
We need to take a break here. We need to take a break. Then we'll come back and hear some more of your health stories. It's Eddie Pence. We'll be right back.
Comedian Eddie Pence in studio with us on the Kevin DeBean Show right now. He is mostly anonymous in the world, but surprisingly funny.
On purpose.
Saturday night, that's tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. You're going to be at thelovitz.com. Tickets available right now for just $15. By the way, does that mean that you come on right after Ralph Garman does his little show?
Yeah, their show ends at 10, and we start up right after that.
There you go. Make a night of it, people.
Yeah, that's quite a night, yeah.
You have a very funny lineup on there, too. So.
Eddie was telling us something super interesting during that last song about his family, about your father-in-law, right?
Yeah. Secret Service. He was Secret Service.
But not Secret Service like lowly Secret Service, protecting the president.
Yeah, not like watching stamps and counting money Secret Service. But
actually protecting presidents.
Yeah, protecting presidents.
From what president to what president?
Reagan to W.
Wow. And this is the elite of the elite for the Secret Service guys that are entrusted with that responsibility.
This is like In the Line of Fire, Clint Eastwood stuff.
Yeah.
Does he scare you now? I mean,
father-in-law?
As much as an old man can scare somebody, I get it.
You're about to get killed.
But kill you.
But I had known him. So he'd known me since I was in high school because I'd known my wife that long. But like my wife's sister, like, her boyfriend got background checks.
No kidding.
Sure.
Wow. But he had known me since I was so young. I got grandfathered in.
When he was watching Reagan, did you call him up and go, nice work?
I was like, good job. Way to take the day off, buddy.
Oh, he took the day off that day?
He actually wasn't there the day Reagan
got lucky.
Shot.
Yeah. Lucky.
All right. Let me ask you this, and I'm sure you've asked him this question, Eddie, because I am fascinated by this. Is it just the tensest job in the world because you're always on edge, prepared for what could go wrong, but 99.9% of the time it never does? Right.
Yeah, it's just there's a lot of prep work into it. It's a lot of looking around, and you have to get there early and prep and think of all the possible scenarios that could happen. And it's weird because you want to actually guard the president and not the president's family, or the, you know, because that's the more dangerous detail, to guard the president's family.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, because they go more places, more civilian places?
No, because people, this is going to be awful on radio, but people are trying to kill the president, not the Secret Service. With the family, you're trying to kidnap the family. In order to kidnap the family, you have to kill the Secret Service.
Interesting.
Wow.
Really?
So it's actually more dangerous to be on the family detail than the president.
Did he ever talk about protecting W? Because I have to imagine that would be like protecting, like if I were president. You know what I mean? Like half tarred.
It's like a hamster. Like, yeah. Where'd he go? Oh, he's in the ball. He's in the ball in the corner.
Did he ever talk about that?
Like he just like the president just wanders off.
What are you doing?
I wanted a Coke.
He would never tell me anything about it. He would never tell me anything about it. I just have to assume.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Does the president...
regardless of your views, you have to protect that man with your life. It's crazy.
Of course. Yeah.
It's a crazy job. It's a crazy job.
Does the president ever get friendly with, like, does he, I mean, because some of these guys are side by side for years. Does he get to know them and have a relationship with them?
Some of them are sort of friendly, but then there was other instances where some people that he was protecting where he would be in a suit. My father-in-law would be in a suit, and the president would be like, I'm going to go for a jog, and get in his sneakers and go jogging. And so my father-in-law had to jog in his suit.
Oh, my God.
For like 2 miles in a suit and, you know, dress shoes while this guy's in sneakers and jogging shoes.
No heads up?
No heads up. Just like, I'm going for a jog, bye. And then wait, hold on. And then.
How many questions did you ask him about Bill Clinton?
I still do, and never get answers.
Come on!
I never get answers.
That's the good stuff.
I know. But they can't ever break that line of trust, ever.
Really? Even after the man has left office?
He said, had I gotten subpoenaed to go to court to testify during the whole impeachment thing, that he would have even gone to jail instead of breaking his
word.
Is
that true of all the Secret Service that watch it?
The good Secret Service, because you can't break that line of trust, because once you do... Then the president can't trust you, so he's going to sneak off and do whatever he does without your protection. Right. So it's
Did you ask him questions like, "Do you know stories about Bill Clinton that would turn my hair white?"
Well, stuff
like that.
He's got stuff. He's like, "Well, my wife was in San Diego one time, and she met up with one of my father-in-law's old coworkers, and he used to work in the CIA, and he was like." Oh, your dad's got some stories. I'm sure he's told you. And we're like, no, he hasn't told us. What stories? He's like, oh, you should ask him. And then so like we ask him, and he's like, I don't know what he's talking about.
But didn't you also say your wife was an intern?
My wife was a White House intern during the Clinton administration.
I guess he didn't know a lot at that time.
Well, she doesn't answer questions either, so I don't know what's happening.
Wow. It's dad protecting daughter is what's happening here. He knows stories, but they involve his daughter.
Oh, this is twisted. This is twisted.
Sorry, that is your wife, isn't it?
This is all going on the Wikipedia page, by the way.
It should. It seems wrong to let those stories die with those agents.
I know.
Like, I feel like they should be written down somewhere else.
He even protected Ron Reagan Jr. at one point.
Wow. Really? Even if those stories don't come out for 75 years, it seems like they shouldn't be lost to history.
He should write them in files and say, once I die, you can open up these files.
Once they die, I die.
It's like the Kennedy files.
Both of them are dead, we want to know what went on.
Exactly.
Because you have to imagine Bill Clinton had Secret Service guys who were responsible for bringing the women in one door, and then Secret Service guys responsible for taking
doors,
them out another.
They were videotaping. They were cleaning things up. I mean, there had to be people.
Had Secret Service to clean up?
Dry cleaner detail again?
Of course. Well, that is just fascinating. Do you talk about any of that in the act, Eddie?
Actually, no. I actually don't mention that at all.
That's pretty interesting. I wouldn't either.
Yeah, it's kind of Why you want to talk about stuff that's interesting?
Right. So you fill up the show with lots of boring stuff that's not nearly as captivating as those stories.
Exactly.
I see. All right. The Lovitz is where it's all happening tomorrow night at 10.
Come down and see uninteresting stuff.
Right after the Hollywood Babylon, you can get those tickets at thelovitz.com. And for the love of God, if you're an Eddie Pence fan, if you like this man, if you bought his album, if you're going to his show, somebody spend 10 minutes and put him up a Wikipedia page. That's all I'm saying.
Or just follow me on Twitter.
Or follow him on Twitter at Eddie Pence. Yeah. Just help a brother out. Eddie, great to meet you, man.
Hey,
thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Muse comes to town next week. By the way, I think we're going to have some of the guys on the Kevin and Bean Show next week.
I believe that's true.
We'll be talking to Muse. We love them so much. They are playing 3 sold-out shows at Staples Center. You want to go? 1-800-520-1067. It's time to lick Lisa.
Can you lick Lisa?
Yeah.
I think you'll find it's hard.
Yeah.
But if you do lick Lisa... Something hot's waiting for you.
Yeah.
Lick, lick Lisa, 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 lick, lick Lisa. But keep clear of her vagina.
Aww. Stupid rules.
Woo! Do I lick Lisa now?
Rules.
Do I lick now?
Not yet.
Lance Armstrong, did you ever lick Lisa?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Dave, the King of Mexico, you're going to be doing the licking today. And Lisa, I warn you, I saw what he did to that wombat on vacation, so be very, very careful.
It was molestation.
Kevin, I always screw it up. Why don't you explain to the callers on hold and the folks at home how this game is played?
Dean is going
to
ask a question. The answer is a number. Lisa May just has to guess at that number. All you have to do is say, is the actual answer higher, lower, or exactly what she said? So you don't have to come up with the actual answer. Lisa has the answer.
Okay. Of course I have
the answer. Then you say higher, lower, or the same.
And if you're right, you go into the drawing, and someone in about 5 minutes will win tickets to go see Muse. Who's our first contestant?
That would be Greg, a forklift mechanic. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good.
Greg, welcome to Lick Lisa, the Muse edition. Remember, Lisa answers first, then we go to you. As you know, right. Lisa, Muse is coming to town, as we've been talking about, with her three big shows at Staples Center, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday of next week. Your question, how many staples are there in the replacement strip that one would use to reload a full-size stapler?
120.
That was quick.
Before did she have an answer on the tip of her tongue?
Greg, is the real answer higher, lower, or is it 120?
Wow. I'm going to say... Oh, man. Exactly.
Exactly.
That's the worst possible answer you could have made.
Unbelievable.
Not a bad guess, though, Lisa. There are 210 staples in the reload.
So. I hate you, Greg.
no licking. Sorry, Dave.
No licking. Thanks for playing. Who's
all
next?
All right, let's go to Anna. Hello, Anna.
Hey, how's it going?
Anna.
Anna, it is well known that the guys in Muse are space enthusiasts, and many of their popular songs make references to things beyond Earth's atmosphere. One of their most popular hits is called Supermassive Black Hole.
Where's this question going?
Oh, dear God.
Your question, Lisa, in how many adult films did the legendary Mandingo appear in his first 8 years in the business?
Oh,
Mandingo,
God.
Largest penis in adult movies. How many movies did he make in his first 8 years in the business?
I personally have seen like 15.
Oh,
so
okay.
I have to say probably 35.
35. Anna, is the actual answer higher, lower, or is that right?
Higher.
So close, Lisa. 500 is the answer. 500 movies is how many Mandingo made.
Yeah!
I couldn't find them. I looked for them.
And none of them were named Supermassive Black Hole, curiously.
Dave, time to lack Lassa, or however you say it. Oh, he's going for the palm. The palm?
He's just warming her up.
Really?
He's just getting started. All right, Anna.
Dave's
Anna,
got his ways.
Anna is in the drawing to win the Muse tickets. Well played, my dear.
All right. Glenn works at Santa Anita. Hello, Glenn.
Hey, how's it going?
Glenn, Muse is made up of three extraordinarily talented musicians, singer and guitarist Matt Bellamy, bassist and keyboardist Chris Wolstenholme, and drummer Dom Howard. Speaking of guys named Howard, how many times has Lakers center Dwight Howard been selected to the NBA All-Star team? Lisa.
She's got a look on her face like, I have no idea.
Four.
Dwight Howard, one of the great players. You say four times on the NBA All-Star team. What say you?
Glenn, higher, lower, or is that right?
Higher.
Yeah, six times.
Well done. Correct.
Congratulations.
The only
you've
time
licked
I
Lisa.
Like Dwight Howard.
Come and lick me, Dave.
Now he's going for the neck.
Oh, nice.
Oh, he moved the hair first. Nice work.
This is why Dave always has a girlfriend.
All right. Is that right?
Yes.
He's got skills.
He's got skills.
Andy is a driver. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, party people.
Welcome to Lick Lisa.
I'm a party people.
All right. Before the band was renamed Muse, the guys briefly played together, calling themselves the Rocket Baby Dolls. Lisa, the fastest-selling doll of all time, was a Cabbage Patch doll introduced in 1982 by Coleco. In their first year on the shelves, how many Cabbage Patch dolls were sold?
Oh, wow.
By the way, did you guys know that Cabbage Patch dolls are still being made and are still popular?
I didn't.
Isn't that crazy all these years later?
3 million.
3 million. Is that the exact right answer, Andy, or is it higher or lower?
Higher.
By the way, not only are you wrong, but Lisa made a great guess. 2.5 million is the correct.
Really? That's all?
And Kevin's over there shaking me.
You're an idiot.
Goodbye. All right. We just have time for one more contestant.
That would be Kyle, who is a land surveyor. Hi, Kyle.
Zero. Lick me.
Dave, if Kyle licks Lisa, then you got to make this last one count, okay? Because this is it. Muse have sold over 15 million albums worldwide. They've won Grammys, MTV Video Music Awards, American Music Awards, and more. They're very talented, but not pretty enough to have ever won the Miss America title. Lisa, how many winners of that competition have there been? How many Miss Americas have there been?
Fifty-five.
Kyle, is that the right answer? Is the right answer higher or lower?
I want to say it's higher.
Yes, it is. 86 years the Miss America pageant has been going.
Nicely done.
Congratulations, Kyle. You lick Lisa. You're in the drawing. Dave, make this lick count.
Yeah. It's going to the other side of the neck.
Oh.
The ear. Oh. That's a wet willy.
Anna is in the drawing, as is Glenn and Kyle, but only one will win tickets to go see Muse next week. Who's it going to be?
Mug's got it.
Oh, he's got it. Who knew he was doing the drawing? That's bad news. Glenn, congratulations.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Good job.
You win tickets.
Lick, lick, Lisa.
Thanks for playing the game.
Lick, lick, Lisa. Lick, lick, Lisa. But keep clear of her. The job.
106.7 K-Rock is K-Rock.
Wait, hold on.
KROQ, it's Kevin and Bean Show at 7:54.
Hold on. Yeah. Eddie Pence, the comedian who just left, he told you that he thought I was a little bit of a dick.
No, not at all.
Why did you just say that to me?
I said that to him.
You told him. He's an asshole.
But he nodded, right? He nodded after you said
you
it?
You came on a little hard.
I liked it. I had a great
time
with him.
No
one's
ever been nicer to him than Bean. That's what he said. Bean's the warmest guy I've ever met in show business.
Bean's up.
I was the one. I said, I'm sorry, Bean was a little bit of a dick. He's like, no, he's the nicest guy I've ever met in show business.
Bean is the worst person to go to find out if the audience is enjoying his comedy. He has no idea with Asperger's, so he takes every.
You're the least famous person in the world.
How could that not be funny to him?
No one knows who you are.
How could he not laugh?
How can someone not love that when they come on a brand new radio show with people they've never met before? How could that not be a big hug? A big virtual hug.
Whether it is or isn't funny, Bean will never be able to ascertain. That's the problem.
I had a good time, and I hope he did too.
Oh,
all right, listen.
Blast.
Kevin Bacon.
You're nothing if not a party.
Kevin Bacon. We will try not to offend him. Talking about his new TV show, The Following. That's coming up next on the show right now. Ralph's got the showbiz beat.
Kevin Bacon, you're looking old. I'm going to turn this into a positive, though. You don't look as old as some older people.
I'm going to turn this into a compliment. You don't have a Wikipedia page. How does that work?
Don't you have any fat girls who like you enough to make a Wikipedia page? Bean's a hug.
Look, I find Bean funny, but
I am a hug.
If I'm a guest and I come in here and I don't know anybody and Bean's my introduction to this show, I'm not happy. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I've been here for a dozen years. I'm not happy. Every time I walk in here, I'm not happy. You know what does make me happy, though?
What?
Criss Cross is getting back together.
Yay!
You could care less about that.
Criss Cross, you know what? They make me want to jump.
Right.
Jump.
I know, right. And they wore their pants backwards. That
they put on their Miggity Miggity Max. They make me want to jump.
Yes. Well, hell, sign me up for that.
I saw a photo of these guys the other day.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you. One of them had his pants on backwards.
Well, that's their trademark, dude.
In 1992, they would wear their pants backwards. And now the guy's wearing
years
his
later.
Pants backwards. He's bald. He's fat. He's just got his pants on backwards. Come on, Criss
Cross. The only way to know if he's in Criss Cross.
Come on, Criss Cross. Yeah, apparently they are doing a concert for the 20th anniversary of Atlanta's So-So Deaf Recordings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Well, I have all these So-So Deaf recording compilations.
I know you do.
Yeah. 20th anniversary. Jermaine Dupri, by the way, founded that label. He'll be performing along with DeBrat and Bow Wow. Oh, this is going to be a show.
It's a blockbuster right there.
I'm leaving after Criss Cross, but it's going to be a show. I'm going to wear my Miggity Miggity Max backwards and just jump.
Well, you're going to be tired from jumping.
Sure. My legs are going to be sore. I better start doing some leg curls now.
Jump!
They are making a movie about the life story of Beach Boys founder Brian Wilson. How about that? They're going to
Well, there's certainly plenty of drama in that story.
Sure is. Two different guys are going to play him. There's going to be one actor playing young Brian, which the Beach Boys rose to meteoric success, or meteoric rise, rather, to success. And then there will be an older Brian, too. Who will be played by Stephen Hawking.
I love to play piano for the Beach Boys.
Paul Dano from Little Miss Sunshine and from There Will Be Blood, great actor, is playing Brian during the Beach Boys years.
How about
great
that?
Choice.
Yeah.
Great choice.
Are they going to feature their biggest hit?
Balls, 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 balls.
Oh, those are good times. Everybody going with their surfboards down there at the beach singing balls, balls, balls.
So glad you dig me.
Yeah. Balls, balls, balls. James Vanderbeek is my boy.
When did that happen?
Today,
no.
When I read this article in Us Weekly magazine that he says he never wears white or black socks.
Why?
I don't know.
Why, Bean?
That part doesn't make me his boy so much. But he says he usually has a Yo Gabba Gabba song stuck in his head. Now he's my boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nah, he has little kids, I take it?
No kids at all. Just has a song stuck in his head. Yes, he has little kids. Yeah. Taylor Swift is suffering. Not enough, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They say she's got a seriously broken heart since One Direction's Harry Styles broke up with her. Insiders are telling PerezHilton.com that she is constantly sending him text messages begging him to take her back. Word has it that Harry is refusing to answer her phone calls or texts, thinking she's just too emotional.
Way too much drama. You can tell.
Oh, what a pain in the ass she must be.
And she's writing a song called You're Stupid and Dumb.
Called Answer My Texts.
And won't answer
you
my
will
texts.
Never, never answer my texts.
Look, I don't know how many of these stories are true. You know, she's a tabloid favorite. Who knows? But if they are, there's nothing more annoying than a girl who won't have sex with you and won't leave you alone. That's a terrible combination. There's
nothing more annoying than being an 18-year-old and the 22-year-old girl you're trying to bang is less mature than you are now being a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got some growing up to do, it sounds like.
And
she's got some dying to do, it sounds like, for me.
Better get to dying. And Mel Gibson
is the best,
first of all.
Yeah.
And second of all, has shelled out $750,000 to his baby mama, Oksana Grigorieva. You remember her, the pain in the ass that she was.
Sure.
She had caused him all kinds of trouble. She would not service him appropriately.
He was demanding it.
And the way she would dress, all provocative, looking like a whore. That was the request Mel made. He deserves it.
And he asked in a nice way.
gave her $750,000 and a house to live in until their daughter turns 18.
I don't care.
That was the deal.
Okay.
But in the settlement, which was made back, by the way, in 2001. Can you believe it's been that long?
No.
That's not possible, right?
This must be a misprint in this story.
Yeah. She had to agree not to sue Mel for any more money. She can't go back to the courts and try to get any more money out of him. Apparently now she is upset with that deal. If she tries to sue him for anything else, she loses the house and the money that she got in the initial.
But she agreed to that, right?
She agreed to it, but now she's ticked off at her lawyers, so she is suing her lawyers who made the deal for her.
Okay.
And she is acting as her own lawyer in the suit against her lawyers.
Oh, that'll work well.
Good luck with that. That should be awesome. Of course, even if she wins.
You're provocatively dressed all the time with your fake boobs. You feel you have to show off.
This doesn't bode well for future lawsuits against Mel, since what lawyer would represent her when another lawyer has already been sued for not getting enough?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Even if she gets a lawyer to sue the other lawyers, what's to keep her from suing those lawyers who sued those lawyers because they didn't get her enough?
Lawyers are going
to
go, I'm out of this.
That's provocative, okay?
Like those Russian nesting dolls full of lawyers, that's what it's going to be. Today's celebrity birthdays. Kevin Costner's 58 years old today. Comedian Dave Attell is 48. You're the most unknown comedian in the world, Dave Attell. You don't have a MySpace page. I looked for you on Twitter, and you didn't have enough followers. He's 48 years old today. Jonathan Davis of Korn is 42. Jason Segel from How I Met Your Mother of Freaks and Geeks, he is 33 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show.
Cousin Sal talks NFL weekend picks coming up next in LaQuisha Reviews. Last night's Buck Wild on MTV. Joshua Jackson next hour. Hey, finally, Kevin, there's a TV show for me and my people. Have you been hearing about The Following?
About serial killers? Yeah.
Yes, serial killers. Thank you.
That's
finally,
you.
We're getting our moment in the sun. It's joining the cast of Kevin Bacon is, of course, the star, and it's joining the lineup on Fox on Monday night, January 21st. Very excited to welcome Mr. Bacon back to the program. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, buddy? What's going on?
Good. Hi. How you guys doing?
Very good. Thank you.
Although I'm not a fan of your character on this show, trying to track down and stop serial killers, why you got to be such a dick?
We've often accused Bean of being a serial killer. That's where this is coming from.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you've seen this, Kevin, but in the press materials for your show, it says that the FBI estimates there are currently up to 300 active serial killers in the United States. Does that even seem possible to you?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, I think that the it's kind of a creepy idea. I mean, when I read it, I didn't know anything about it. It wasn't called The Following, so I didn't know what the premise of the show was. And you know, I see this serial killer escape from jail, and then I see this FBI guy, and he's able to get the guy, he's going to put him back in jail, but it's not the end of the show. And I'm thinking, well, that's kind of weird. Isn't the whole thing going to be about how I'm tracking this guy for the whole series? And then you find out that he's actually created this cult.
All right, now tell us about the cult and how different this show is.
Well, he's created this cult using a server, an internet server, and he's from prison. He's been able to access it, so he's been kind of recruiting people that are like-minded and from all walks of life, you know, which means that in the course of the series, you never really know if somebody is part of his club or is not, and that includes the good guys as well.
So imagine if all 300 serial killers could communicate and act as one.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's creepy. It's good.
It is. It's very creepy. It's very dark, and it is, you know, and I know that you said you were, you know, you called it a page-turner when you read the script, and that's what it's like watching that first episode, because you just can't imagine where it's going next, and that's a rare treat on television, especially for, you know, this kind of show. You're rarely surprised on this kind of show anymore, because we've been seeing it for so long, but your show manages to make a whole different thing out of it.
Well, Kevin Williamson is the creator, and he's the guy behind the Scream movies and Vampire Diaries and Dawson's Creek, and he has a great feel for throwing things in that come completely out of left field. And in fact, I get the scripts, you know, probably, you know, a few days before I'm going to shoot them, and I'm constantly shocked. I'll just sit there. I can't wait to sit down and find out what's going to happen. And, you know, I turn the page and I say, oh, man, I really did not see that coming. So we've tried to keep the pilot has that kind of vibe. And I think we've been doing a pretty good job of keeping that as kind of a constant throughout the rest of the episode. Now,
have you been a leading man on the TV show? Or is this the first?
No, this is the first. The last TV show I did was in the 70s. It was called Guiding Light.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, look, as everybody knows now, actors go where the work is, and there's, you know, it's completely blurred now between big screen and small screen. I mean, some of the best material ever being presented in history is on television these days. It just is.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's been a real kind of evolution, and also an evolution for me, because when I started out, after I left The Guiding Light, I was like, I'm never going back to television. I'm, you know, that was it. You know, there was a real dividing line between making movies and doing theater and doing TV, and that those lines obviously have, as you said, have blurred. And I find myself, you know, when I'm choosing things that I want to do, like watch on DVR or get from, you know, rent or whatever, it's often television series. When I'm hanging out with my friends and we're talking about you know, what's happening in popular culture, it often revolves around television series. So I think there's been a real shift in that way, and I'm a television consumer, and now I'm a television actor.
Is there a big difference in making movies and making TV? I mean, does TV just speed through compared to making a movie?
Well, it does. Yeah, it does, for sure. I mean, you know, we have 9 days to shoot 43 minutes of television, and you know, I mean, X-Men First Class took us about 9 months. So, you know, you have to go a lot on instinct. You got to kind of hit the ground running, and you know, you just have to try to trust that if you understand the character, you can just throw yourself into the situations.
Well, I'm glad the show is finally here, because I first saw a trailer for it about a month and a half or 2 months ago, and I put it into my TiVo, and there's some sporting event that has Following in it, and I've recorded 300 of those.
Oh, no.
So thank God the actual TV show is airing on Monday night, so I can start getting what I want.
Exactly. It's not curling or something.
Right. No.
Okay.
Well, the show debuts Monday night on Fox, and you definitely have to check it out. Kevin Bacon is the star, playing an FBI agent. Hey, last question for you. A lot of times on these shows, they have advisors to the actors. Have you sat down, talked to the FBI, the kind of guys who do the work your character does, to kind of get it right and get it real?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Spend some time. We don't have anybody on the set on an ongoing basis, but maybe moving forward we will. But, yeah, I spent time with the New York FBI.
Ah,
which is
super interesting.
You know, interesting. Our show, even though we shoot it in New York, as of yet it doesn't take place in New York. We're still kind of like in Virginia, but hopefully someday we'll be actually able to use, you know, the city.
Right.
Yeah, good times. Monday night on Fox, it's called The Following. Kevin Bacon, great to have you on today, man. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, folks.
LaQuisha talks Buck Wild coming up. Also, actor Joshua Jackson on the way. And Mark Wahlberg next hour as well here on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, got to talk some football. Hey, Cousin Sal, before we talk about this weekend, is this the craziest week you could ever remember in sports between the Manti story and the Lance Armstrong story, both going on at the same time?
Lance Armstrong is very lucky. In fact, I think they should investigate him first into this whole hoax thing, because all the attention has been diverted away from him and towards this Manti. But yeah, you're right. I really think it's like the most bizarre. It's one galooly away from being the most bizarre sports story ever. I mean, I guess there was a time we lost to the midgets in basketball.
That was a dark chapter.
That happened.
But I don't even know what to make of this. You know, I did some research. You know this Manti Te'o, he's not even Irish.
What?
No, he's Hawaiian, of course.
He's never said he was Irish.
He just plays for Notre Dame. Don't be confused by that, Sal. Come on.
I take everything literally. But I think the best part is he's never going to trust anyone again. Like, I'm fast forwarding to April 25th, the draft day, when, you know, like, the GM of the team that's drafting you calls, and it's going to be like, hey, Manti, this is Buddy Nix, general manager of the Bills. I want to let you know that in a few minutes we'll be drafting you with the 8th overall pick, and we couldn't be happier. I'm not falling for this prank. Who's my number, you jackal? And I don't think I'm going to trace this call.
Exactly.
I don't trust anyone ever again. I don't know.
Well, Cousin Sal joins us every Friday throughout the NFL season with his picks for the weekend. You can follow him on Twitter at @TheCousinSal. Read all about it at Grantland.com. You, so far in the playoffs, by the way, the last two weekends have been 3 games out of 4, if I'm doing my math correctly. You were 3 for 4 again last weekend, right?
Yeah, I did well. And, Dean, I said you should wager your human organs with your producer, King of Mexico. You would have been left with 0 kidneys. I would have been hysterical for radio.
It would have been funny.
Yeah, I was glad about
you
that.
You did pick the Ravens, and I mocked you, and I was so wrong, and you were so right.
That was a great win for me. But, and, you know, like, it starts off with the Falcons and Niners, and you guys know, and you hate it. I could sense how much you hate how I love picking games solely on public perception and where it's going. And the casual bettor right now is down on the Falcons, and they think that they lucked out against being Seahawks, and with the last second win after a missed field goal, after a timeout, like the final 10 minutes of that game could have gone like a dozen different ways. And the public, I think, feels Atlanta was very fortunate to advance. And on the other hand, you got this 49ers team. They beat the crap out of the mighty Packers. Colin Kaepernick, the 49ers quarterback, where did he come from? He's got tattoos all over the place and a patch of hair on his chin. He looks like the lead singer of Anthrax. I don't know. I mean, he runs, he throws, he does it all. The 49ers were by far the most impressive of the 8 teams that played last week. And the line opened at San Fran -3. It went to 5 and now settled at 4.5. People better be careful. I don't like giving points on the road at this stage. It's rare. And it's not easy to do what Colin Kaepernick did at home last Saturday against the soft Packers defense on the road. And he's not going to do it again, I don't think, against this Falcons squad. I like it to be a very close game, and I hate doing this because I don't leave myself a lot of room for error, but I'm taking the Falcons and the points in a tight one that I feel the 49ers will win. Final score, 24-23. Take Atlanta plus the four and a half.
So you're saying the 49ers win, but they don't cover the 4.5-point spread.
I just can't pull the trigger on taking the upset here, but I do like the points.
All right. Yeah. So you think that Matt Ryan, the quarterback for the Falcons, is finally off the schneid now? That is, now that he's one playoff game, you think he's going to continue to play well? He's not going to collapse like he has in every other postseason?
I don't know if this makes you feel any better, Dean, but I think that was the best team in the NFC that they could have faced last week, and the Niners are not better than the Seahawks.
I question whether Kaepernick can continue doing what he did. I think he had
that was a once in a season, or maybe even once in a 5-season game that he had last week. Absolutely,
and it's bizarre. And now they have tape of him, and it's going to be a lot more difficult.
All right, let's move on to Ravens, who you know the Cinderella pick from last weekend, Sal. They're going up against the New England Patriots, who we always assume the Patriots are going to win. What say you for this game?
Then I'll tell you, I love this matchup. I'd be okay with this being the AFC title game for the next 3 years. It was exciting last year. It promises to be a great matchup again. And the Pats, you know, like you said, they're everything you expect. Tom Brady, he throws all over these defenses, and he'll take advantage of Ray Lewis. I love this Ray Lewis thing because he's going to have to cover Aaron Hernandez, and that's going to be an embarrassment. I mean, he says it's God's will. Everything's God's will. He's able to play with this torn bicep. God is forgetting about Newtown and everything else. God was there when Ray Lewis burned his bloody clothes after that stabbing incident. Honestly, all the stars are going to have to be aligned in order for Ray to slice through the secondary with piercing speed, enabling him to cut upfield and carve up the passing schemes. You see what I did there with the knife stuff?
That's good. Yeah.
Listen, here's the stat that sticks out to me. The Patriots have given up a league-high 74 plays of 20 yards or more. That's astounding. And all of a sudden, Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco is the scariest deep ball thrower in the league. And he could hook up with Anquan Boldin or Jacoby Jones or Torrey Smith a couple times. I think this goes down to the wire. I think he does it. I like the Ravens plus 8. Screw it. I think they win the game. I'm predicting an upset. 30-24 Baltimore. It's going to be a Harbaugh Brothers Super Bowl.
There you go.
Ravens plus 8 over the Patriots. Falcons plus 4.5 over the 49ers. But again, interestingly, Sal thinks the 49ers will actually win that game. Those are the games for the weekend. You can follow Sal on Twitter at @VCousinSal. Read him at Grantland.com. And, of course, join him every weeknight on ABC at 11:35 with his cousin Jimmy Kimmel. I guess we'll see you at the Walk of Fame ceremony next week, dude.
Yeah, you guys going to be there?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
It was a fun time.
Thanks for coming on, man. Have a great weekend.
All right, fellas. Take care.
8:39 on the world-famous K-Rock. Time to talk to LaQuisha. Good morning, LaQuisha.
You go right to hell.
How are you today?
What's wrong with just a good morning, Kevin and Bean? How are you? How are my white friends? I missed you. Come on.
All right. Did you watch Buck Wild last night?
No, you do that.
No.
Oh,
no,
then maybe that's why you're in a good mood and I'm in a bad mood.
Why do you hate this show so much? This is perfect for you. Again, as I always remind you, you love stupid white people. You love making fun of us.
Yeah, I like chocolate fudge, too, but I don't want to sit down and eat 8 pounds of it in an hour.
That show's an hour?
Yeah, it's an hour. I get enough damn dumb white people just walking around.
What happened last week?
Well, last night. Something good happened.
Yeah, let's talk about that instead.
You have to go to Kevin and Bean archives to hear what happened last week. Last night, Sawa goes mudding with the fellas.
Huh?
And mudding is not a sexual euphemism for something when you go mudding. I think Sawa's done that too. But this mudding is a sport that they engage in Sissonville, West Virginia, where you get in your pickup truck and you drive through mud puddles as fast as you can. That passes for entertainment in West Virginia.
I know we're only, 3 weeks into the season, but every week they find a new thing to do in the mud on this show, LaQuisha.
They love mudding.
You have to use what you have.
But Sal was a little upset.
The guys are taking me mudding today, and I'm a little afraid. I'm scared that they won't give a crap if the truck flips over and I'm still in it.
Oh, they'd give a crap. In fact, I know I'd give a crap. I'm rooting for that to happen. But sadly, everyone walked away alive.
Oh, that's too bad.
So they didn't have sex with her corpse and bury it in the woods, which I assumed is what would happen if she died while they were mudding. All the girls go out, Drea and Anna and Katie, because Drea's thinking about breaking up with her boyfriend, Jesse J. And so they all go to a Mexican restaurant to get their drinks on. But Katie doesn't have an ID, so she has to bring out her birth certificate that luckily she carries with her everywhere.
Right, sure.
And they just start discussing all the details on her birth certificate.
So lucky that my birth certificate was in my car.
How do you carry your birth certificate?
That's so strange. Did you know the hour and minute of my birth was 12:39 a.m.?
You were so close to Justin Bieber's. 12:56 is when he was born.
That's all you need to know about these people.
Oh, my God.
LaQuisha, let me ask you a question. That was on TV?
That was on television.
Okay.
One of the girls knows what time Justin Bieber was born.
No wonder you hate us.
That's right, the one I hate you. Now, Drea decides to break up with Jesse J, so she goes to his place to pick up her belongings because, after all, they are teenagers and they are living together and he does have a child at 18. So she's got to get her stuff out of the house, and the breakup does not go well.
Let's get this straight. I'm not treating you like anything. I'm not making any bad gestures towards you, nothing like that.
You were the one who was in the wrong.
And I understand that.
If I was so in the wrong and you're the one wanting to work it out too, then why are you coming to get your
I said I was going to get some of it.
You can get your and kick rocks for all I care.
Oh, no, you didn't.
No, he didn't.
He told her to kick rocks.
No, he didn't tell her to kick rocks.
Which, by the way, happens constantly where they live. You can't walk in Sissonville without kicking rocks because it looks like a bombed-out shell of a used-to-be city. So how do they make themselves feel better after something like that dramatic happens? Well, naturally, you do what I call hillbilly jet ski.
Hillbilly jet ski?
Yeah. They take a garbage can lid and they tie it to the back of a tractor.
Uh-huh.
And then you sit on the garbage can lid and they drag you around the field at a high speed.
I used to
on
do
a
that.
Tractor. What the what?
Nothing. Go ahead.
What?
Nothing.
You,
go ahead.
You said that. You say that again.
I used to do that.
You used to ride on garbage can lids.
Yes.
Tied from the back of a motor vehicle.
Yes.
Really of course could. He did, LaQuisha. You know him.
I should be on the cast of Buck Wild.
You should, because Shane, S-H-A-I-N, thinks it's the greatest sport in the world.
I think riding a garbage can lid, oh, I think it was fun. I think everybody that rode on it wants to ride on it again, because it was freaking awesome.
You are Buck Wild, Kevin.
Oh, man, don't say that.
Now, they all have a party that night, and everybody gets drunk. And there's a fist fight, believe it or not, amongst these hillbillies.
Really?
Between Tyler and Jesse B. Now, not to be confused with Jesse J. There's so many goddamn Jessies in this town, they have to have second names, like initials. So Jesse B. gets just drunk, just destroyed drunk. And Tyler, who's relatively sober, takes advantage of this and starts to pummel him mercilessly in the face until his face is a bloody mess.
Wow.
Everyone looking upon this sight is disgusted. Well, except for one of the girls.
Quit it, Jesse! You get the f*** out of here! Alright? What the f*** now? Get the f*** up and get out of here right now, alright?
Get out of here, man!
Stay over, Tyler.
I got him.
Oh my god, Tyler. That was so hot.
Dear God.
Nothing turns a West Virginia girl on more than watching a sober person beat the snot out of a stumbling drunk person who can't defend themselves.
That was so hot.
That is so hot. Let's have sex all over his bloody face. Well, Tyler and Joey decide they have to get summer jobs. You know, they're just wasting their summer. They got no money, they got no future, they got no hopes. And so they're going to start their own business, cutting grass.
Okay.
What are you, 12? They put up a poorly written sign in the local general store saying they will cut people's grass for a certain price. And Tyler says, now, finally, they're moving up in the world.
You got to have a summer job. Without goals and dreams, where are you going to go?
Without goals and dreams, where are you going to go?
He's got a point.
He can finally achieve his goals and dreams of cutting somebody's lawn for $5. Well, everyone's feeling pretty good now, and West Virginians, they know how to celebrate the summertime by pulling out their shotguns and shooting liters of soda and cantaloupes in the backyard with shotguns.
That can't go well.
Real-time, live-ass shotguns.
Yeah.
I should be on the hunting channel.
Yeah, Ashley says she should be on the hunting channel. I think she should be on the animal channel. She should be in the puppy bowl. Well, Ashley and Katie and Dre, they all go off for a girl's afternoon because Dre's upset having broken up with Jesse J, not to be confused with Jesse B.
Right.
And so there's three things that a girl needs to do to mend a broken heart in West Virginia.
There are three things a girl should do to get over a guy in West Virginia. Shoot guns, get a tattoo, find a rebound hookup. So Kara, Shay, and I decided we're going to go get tattoos.
They shot the guns already, so now they have to get the tattoos.
All right.
Okay.
And all
makes
three
sense.
Of them get matching tattoos of the three-letter acronym NPS, which means no P-word, S-word.
Okay.
Because they're tough chicks, and they don't put up with no P-word, S-word.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
There's nothing like getting a tattoo that you have to explain to everybody you meet for the rest of your life.
Hey, what does NPS mean? No P-word, S-word? And it's Dre's first tattoo, so she's a little scared, so she gets it inside her bottom lip.
Oh.
That's the classiest of all spots to get a tattoo, because that's where they tattoo cattle.
I think LaQuisha's going to die.
I think she's going to explode.
I think she's going to kill us.
They
it's worse.
The guns, they get the tattoos. Now that she just needs a rebound hookup, and it is Joey's birthday, and they're all at a party, and Joey just thinks that Dre is a so beautiful girl because not only is she lovely, but, well, I'll let him explain it.
Man, Shay is already smoking hot, but you put a potato gun in her hands? Damn.
Yeah, a potato gun.
Is that what they call a shotgun?
No, a potato gun, Kevin, is actually what it is, a potato gun. They get some PVC pipe, and they manufacture a crude weapon that they fill with butane gas and light with a Bic lighter, and they have a potato jammed in one end of it, and it explodes and blows the potato across the field.
This is the best show ever.
The other person's backyard. That
Kevin,
is a potato gun.
How did you not do that after you got off the trash can lid all over the yard?
I would have if I'd known about it.
Well, Joey and Drea, they're a match made in heaven, because it has been well over 13 minutes since Drea had sex with her ex-boyfriend.
Sure.
So now she's going to have sex with Joey on his birthday, but first, before she does that, she thinks it'd be sexy to slather his body with apple butter and lick it off in front of everyone.
What's happening?
Nothing sexier than a jar full of apple butter.
Ugh.
First of all, what the hell is apple butter? And secondly, why is this young lady licking it off this scrawny, long-haired hillbilly? Well, he's having a hard time concentrating while she's doing it.
The whole time Shay's licking apple butter off me, I'm just like, come on, Joey, you got to keep it together now. Think about baseball or something else right now.
Yeah, Joey had to concentrate on things that he didn't like so he wouldn't get too excited, like book learning and teeth. Haircuts and English language, things that just repulse him in order to keep his erection down. So they hop on the back of a four-wheeler and go off into the swamps and have sex. The end.
Wow.
Go what a to show. Hell.
What a show.
We'll talk. Can't
wait
for next week. Can't wait for next week.
I hate you.
Thank you, LaQuisha.
I hate you.
You're the best.
I hate you.
Hey, real quick before we get to Joshua Jackson on after the top of the hour, what have I missed on Fringe so far if I haven't been watching?
Nothing.
That's a beer okay, mug good. Question.
Nothing. Could you explain to me the past three seasons for Fringe for people, myself, not haven't watched?
Series finale of Fringe is tonight. Josh talks about it.
Up.
Also, your Muse album and qualifying to join them in Paris to see them on stage in concert. It's destination number two of the K-Rock World Tour 2013. All that in the next few minutes. First, though, Ralph's got the show.
I'm actually depressed that Fringe is.
I know,
yeah.
Me too.
Fringe finale's tonight.
So good.
I loved that show. So very deeply.
All right. Let's try to move on to happier things, shall we?
At least we got alphas.
What the?
Now you're just being mean. Ashley Green needs to get someone to proofread her tattoos. She recently got a tattoo on her foot after wrapping up a movie called Satanic in New Orleans, where she was shooting down there.
And did she go mudding first?
She didn't go mudding, no. She got a tattoo on her foot that says, "Life's a dance." Only the artist left the apostrophe out of life's, so now it makes no sense at all.
Seems like something you could add, though.
I guess you could. Yeah, you could just have that touched up, right? We have certainly had worse stories about tattoos. Kim Kardashian.
Who?
I'm sorry. Porn star Kim Kardashian tells E! News that she and Kanye have not decided on a name for their baby yet.
It'll start with a K, you know.
Of course it will. And she said, we probably won't be announcing it anyway.
What planet is she on?
She says she's going to keep their child out of the public eye.
Oh, my God.
Oh, please.
For 30 seconds, she added, under her breath. Look, they're already taking highest bidder for the baby pictures. That is not keeping the baby out of the public eye.
No baby is going to be more overexposed than this one.
Yeah. Apparently, Kim also isn't too pleased that she still can't get a divorce from her husband, Chris Humphries. But does call Kanye the love of my life. This week, she added, under her breath.
I don't know if you saw David Letterman grilling the Kardashians on the show the other night, but Kim explained that the reason that the hang-up is that he wants an annulment. Is that Chris Humphries wants an annulment, and she has to admit fraud for there to be an annulment.
Yeah.
He doesn't want a divorce.
Then do it. Then do it.
I agree.
Admit that you're a fraud and get annulled. How much do you love your new man? Don't you want to spend the rest of your life with Kanye? Ooh, he's the love of my life. Ooh, you're a schmookie. No, you're a schmookie.
And he deserves her to say it, too.
Nah, you know what? I want them in a courtroom.
I do, too.
I want all the details. I want them cut open and laid bare like the shark from Jaws when they bring it up on the pier and they just empty it out. And like a tricycle comes out and a license plate. I just want it all out there. Got him. Got him. Today's celebrity birthdays. Jason Segel's 33 years old today. Jay Chou, who was Kato in The Green Hornet, 34 years old. Dave Attell, very funny comedian, is 48. Kevin Costner turns 58 years old today. And Jonathan Davis of Korn celebrates his 42nd birthday today. Kevin, that's an uncanny impression. It's like he's in the room with us.
That was Jonathan. That wasn't me.
Yeah, okay. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
You're going to be all right, Ralph.
No, I'm not.
You got a family. You've got other things that you
who cares?
Can
whatever
occupy
with the
your time with. I know. I know you're depressed. I know it's a tough end of a long 5 years of love of the TV show Fringe, but tonight we've got to say goodbye to it. Ralph, you just have to move on.
Honey Boo Boo's still on television and Fringe is going off the air. What kind of bizarro world do we live in?
We put together a support team to kind of help you through this difficult time, and Josh Jackson is on the team, and he joins us on the phone right now back on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Josh.
Hey. Josh?
Yeah?
There you are.
There he is.
I only get one of your voices, bizarrely.
Oh, that's strange, really?
Oh, let's change that. Can you hear? Let's test. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, can you hear me?
All good. Wait a minute.
I think we're all good.
Okay, I'm in. How are you guys?
I think we're back. Well, we need your help because Ralph is representing the millions of Fringe fans that are really in a serious, actual blue depression right now, realizing your show is going away tonight. What words do you have to comfort him?
Well, I hope the comforting words will be that we go out in a pretty spectacular fashion. Actually, we go out in a two-part episode, one of which totally focuses on the Olivia character and wraps up her story.
Okay.
And then the grand finale, which is just a big action-packed story that then ends with sort of, I think, a pretty heartbreaking ending, and then ultimately resolves itself in a way that I hope Fringe fans will appreciate and enjoy. It's hard to satisfy people. You know, the fans of the show has been so dedicated to it, and I don't think we'll get it right for everybody.
Yeah.
But I hope it'll be a satisfying ending.
I think more than most TV shows are complicated enough, and just ending a TV any TV show is a big, you know, a big deal. But this TV show, as complex and as great as it's been, how could you even possibly satisfy everybody?
Well, I mean, I don't think you can ever possibly satisfy everybody, but in a strange way, because the show is so big and so complex, as it got right down to the end, and maybe this is just in retrospect, but when I read the script, you sort of had the feeling of like, oh yeah, of course that's how it has to end. Because as big as the story became, it always was about this central screwed up family with Walter as the father, and then Peter and Olivia, and to a large extent also Astrid as the kids.
Right.
So, you know, the ending of our story, even though it's big and told on, you know, a fringe scale, is really about those people and how they finish up together.
Well, I would never begin to ask Josh how things end. We'll wait and see. But
how did things end?
I just want to go out and put it on the record here. This is my guess. Walter wakes up in a home, and the whole thing's been an acid flashback, and none of it really happened.
He's still in the insane asylum?
It's all been a dream. He's looking into, like, one of those snow globes, and he's just out of his head on acid.
I think, honest to God, I actually think that there was some discussion about that. And then I think J.J. and Wyman were like, no, we can't do that.
Here's my guess, and tell me this doesn't happen. Faux Olivia and Olivia get together.
That's
you mean like
actually,
as a couple?
As a couple.
As a couple, yeah. And then me and poor Lincoln Lee are just sitting there.
Yeah, exactly.
Holding
yeah.
each other.
You and your same-age daughter.
Yeah, exactly. Me and my awkwardly beautiful same-age daughter sitting there.
You and your daughter get to wake up in bed with Suzanne Plachette, though, so you got that to look forward to.
Great reference. Talk to me
about this. This is the voice of Joshua Jackson on the phone. We're talking about Fringe, two-hour season finale tonight on Fox. Talk to me about this. You're a guy who's been fortunate, and also because you're talented, you've been in some great shows and great movies over the years. How does this one rank for you in terms of show business experiences, in terms of the work?
Well, I don't know that, you know, the first time around TV-wise, I was kind of unaware of everything that was going on because I was a kid. And to be on this show, to be on something like Fringe that had, it never hit the huge audience, but to have such a passionate audience, and then to work with guys, not only actors, but, you know, the sort of creative brain trust of our show, who continually pushed and tried to grow it, that for me is a much greater triumph than we had on Dawson's, because I felt like on Dawson's Creek, ultimately we sort of rested on our laurels and went back to the same stories over and over and over again, whereas this show, and it, you know, it annoyed some of the audience, but we kept on blowing up the
yes, you
the
did,
and trying to figure out a new way to tell the stories, which I think is a much more interesting thing to do.
What about working with John Noble?
There's no, I mean, I've said it and I'll say it and I'll keep on saying it. There's no amount of good words you can say about working with a guy like that. One of the hardest things in television, and you can, you know, I certainly as a fan have seen it, and as an actor I know it, is maintaining a level of curiosity and interest in the work, even at hour 18 of day 200. You know what I mean? And even on, even if it's a great show, people still have that difficulty. What is amazing about John is not only he's a great actor and a really decent man, but he was constantly engaged by the work that he was doing. And that energy and enthusiasm, it bleeds into every take of what he's doing. And it, you know, it helps inform all of the other actors' performances around him, because you can't help but be energized by him. It's an amazing thing that he did on Fringe.
And I think Walter Bishop will be seen by history as we look back as one of the great television characters.
I gotta believe that that's true. Yeah. I mean, we can talk about Emmys and awards and recognition and how silly I think it is that because we're on a science fiction show that performance that he gave wasn't put in the same pantheon as House or anything from Mad Men or anything from Breaking Bad.
Yep.
But truly, I can't think of even three better performances in the last 15 years on television.
Yeah.
He did a masterful thing, and he did it over the course of 5 years playing basically a stock and trade character. If I say mad scientist, we all have an idea of what it is, and he totally redefined what that character is. It's brilliant what he did on Fringe.
And sometimes he would redefine it twice in the same episode by playing two different versions of that guy.
Two different versions of it, and then we did an alternate, an alternate timeline, so like a 2.5 different versions. Yeah.
And he'd be animated sometimes.
Exactly.
Well, that is very well said, and I know that you have such gratitude for the fans. I mean, as complicated as this show was, you got to give it up for Fox for keeping it on for 5 seasons, for letting you guys have the time to flesh out the final season and go out the way you want, and the fans for stomping their feet and screaming when it looked like it was on the verge of cancellation. I mean, they really did make the effort to make sure that show got the chance to come back.
To make sure that the show got the chance to come back, and to give the people at Fox and Warner Brothers a good enough excuse to make space for a show that when we had our 100th episode wrap party at the end of this season, Peter Roth, who's the head of Warner Brothers, got up on stage and by way of saying thank you to the crew said, you know, there's no earthly reason for this show to be on the air right now.
That's very nice.
We're in the business of making money, and this is not a money-making show, but the passion that the audience feels for it is the reason why we wanted to bring it back. We thought there would be riots. And it gave Joel Wyman the chance to take these 13 episodes at the end and finish the show in his way, which is our way. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very, very unusual thing to be given that gift. So
there's going to be riots tonight, and I'm going to lead them, and I'm getting me a TV. I'm telling you that right now.
Well,
you've always been very generous with your time season after season, spending a few minutes with the Kevin and Bean Show, and we really appreciate that. And I hope when you go on to the next thing, which is probably going to be, on Honey Boo Boo, I assume you'll be joining that cast. You'll still come on and talk to us.
I announce it today, but I am joining Honey Boo Boo.
All right. It's crazy cousin Josh.
Exactly.
The 2-hour season finale airs tonight starting at 8 o'clock on Fox, and then own it on DVD for the rest of your life. It's called Fringe. Josh, thanks so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Of course, and thank you always for the support over the last 5 years.
Thank you, man.
A couple of listeners very disappointed we did not ask Mark Wahlberg if there were any plans for a sequel to Kevin and Bean's Rockstar, a movie that we all starred in together with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up, an embarrassing point in my life.
He also didn't bring up he was my movie son either.
That's
Thank
true.
So much.
That's
so,
true.
Yeah.
Well, he would have gone on and on about you, Ralph. I know. Would have changed the complexion of the whole interview. So.
interesting that we have 6 degrees of Mark Wahlberg going on here since we all do movies with him, I
sure.
guess. All right, 9:39. Ralph is here with our final look at the Showbiz Beat for the week. What's going on?
Just when I was feeling about as low as I could, knowing I'd have to say goodbye to my beloved Fringe tonight as their series finale airs on Fox, I read some news that just perked me right up.
All right.
I got a reason to live now.
Okay.
I thought it was all over, but then I found out that Criss Cross is getting back together again.
I know they were young, but don't they sound like they're three? That song.
They're the Miggity Miggity Max.
I was thinking how that song will lose a lot of its charm if it sounds like it's being done by an old dude. You know what I mean?
It loses kind of
the youthful,
yeah,
the youthful exuberance is what makes that song fun.
I read this article and I realized that now that you play that, I was mistaken. I thought Christopher Cross was getting back together.
Oh no,
again.
Very
I
different.
Sailing me away.
That's crappy soft rock.
How dare you, sir?
Crap.
When you get caught between the moon and New York
Crappity
City.
Crap.
Why does Kevin hate Christopher Cross?
I don't know, man.
Crap.
Christopher Cross rocks.
Crap. Really, just
and
one
I ride
word.
Like the wind.
Crap.
Michael J. Fox is the man. I am really looking forward to his new sitcom on NBC, even though it's got sort of a premise that you wouldn't necessarily think screams comedy. Michael J. Fox coming back to NBC in a sitcom inspired by his real life. He will play a husband and a father of three in New York City, juggling his family and career while dealing with Parkinson's disease. Of course, Fox famously suffering with the disease himself. He will be a news anchor, decides to go back to work after a new medication helps him manage his Parkinson's. The show begins this summer, so we have that to look forward to. They just announced that Betsy Brandt from Breaking Bad will be co-starring in that sitcom with him. She's a super talented actress. So I'm interested to see how that turns out.
He's so likable, A, and B, he's a good comic actor.
Great comic actor,
yeah.
And a great guy, and I like him even more now after the Golden Globes, when Tina Fey famously said towards the end of the show, when she screamed at Taylor Swift to stay away from Michael J. Fox's son. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Because he was one of the Golden Globes always brings up a son and daughter of someone famous in show business and then becomes Mr. and Miss Golden Globes, and they hand out the awards on stage. So Michael J. Fox's son Sam was on stage that night, and so they caught up with Michael J. Fox recently and asked him what he thought of that joke and would he approve of Taylor Swift, the evil Tadoff Switler, dating his son Sam, who's 23 years old. Fox said, no, just back off.
Yeah. Yeah, I think any parent would say that.
He also said, I don't keep with it at all, but Taylor Swift writes songs about everybody she goes out with, right? The reporter replied, right. He said, what a way to build a career. So I like Fox even more now. He said, I wouldn't even know who she was if he brought her home for dinner. But then eventually the breakup song would hit the radio, and I'd be like, oh, that song, Sam, you piece of S? Oh, that was the girl you brought home. Oh, now I know who she is. So Michael J. Fox, still funny as ever. God bless him. More TV news. CBS has ordered a pilot for a new series called Hostages.
Hostages.
Daily Variety reports the show is going to be about a female surgeon whose family is taken hostage right before she's supposed to operate on the president.
So somebody's trying to kill the president?
Right. There are forces who are trying to make it not so successful surgery for the president. We've got your family. Do what we say. How that's going to become an entire series? I don't know.
Yeah. It's a long surgery.
Toni Collette will play the doctor, apparently. She's a super talented actress.
Right.
So we'll see what happens.
This is kind of odd timing in that there are Americans being held hostage right now in Algeria. You think that it would be, you know, it'd be kind of sensitive right now to be putting something like that for entertainment purposes on the television.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Bringdown. Now I can't enjoy Hostages when that's on the air.
Wow.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Buzzkill.
And Lindsay Lohan was the subject of an interview by her co-star James Dean, D-E-E-N, not the one that's dead. He co-stars with her in the upcoming film The Canyons. And during the interview, he talked about the fact that she had to do a four-way sex scene for her upcoming film. And James Dean describes that she was very uncomfortable on the set. The other three performers in that scene were all porn actors. He said this was a big deal since she was showing her boobs and simulating sex. She had never done a sex scene before. Everyone else on the set was so relaxed about it. He said she feels like she felt like she needed to throw some drama in there and bring attention back to her. While she was half naked with two completely naked co-stars in bed, she suddenly made them put their robes back on because she was really uncomfortable. They pointed out she was still topless, and she said, "No, I can be naked, but you can't be."
You said one of them was a
nightmare.
You said one of them was a girl, right, Ron?
Yeah.
I'll bet she looked better than Lindsay. Naked,
maybe.
Oh, she looked under 40?
So she didn't want to be shown up, maybe.
I think just people weren't paying enough attention to her. If she's the only topless person in the room, then everyone has to look at her, right?
Yeah, true. I'm going to copy that.
Dean also confirms the story from the New York Times where there was one violent scene they were filming and Lohan wanted the director, Paul Schrader, to actually slam her to the ground so she could feel the pain.
Okay.
Then after they did that, she got up and said, "I'm fine. I get bruised and hit all the time," she said.
Good time.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's a lot of darkness going on in that life.
Kevin, can't your charity get her out of her bad situation?
I wish.
Can't you rescue her from herself?
I wish.
Can you go in there and have an intervention where she has to divorce herself and get out of it?
I'm not sure how that works.
Come on. You saw Freaky Friday. There's a couple people living in there. Just got to get one of them out. That's all. Make a run for it. And this is even better news than Criss Cross getting back together, if you can believe it or not. Would you stop?
Sorry, you said Criss Cross.
Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band's touring Australia in March. Little Steven Van Zandt cannot perform with the band because he's busy filming a TV series. So they've had to bring in a new replacement guitarist for the E Street Band. Look, if you're going to replace someone in the E Street Band, you can't just bring in some
Jamoke
studio musician and come in there and take over. You got to give him the real deal. And so it's been announced today that Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine will be sitting in with the E Street Band. That's pretty cool.
He played with them as a guest,
yeah,
many times.
Yeah, they're friendly, so it's nice that Tom's got the time and inclination to do a little tour with them.
He can play the guitar
in March. He can. Turns out, play the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Before I say goodbye for the week, I do have some more tickets to give away. These are my last tickets to the Hansel and Gretel World Premiere.
Yay!
Red carpet of the premiere of the movie Hansel and Gretel, starring Jeremy Renner and Gemma Arterton. Boy, does this look awesome. It's next week, Thursday, January the 24th at Grauman's Chinese Theater. Really, if you're going to experience a Hollywood red carpet premiere, there's no better theater in the world than Grauman's Chinese Theater. The movies and theaters everywhere the next day on Friday, January the 25th. If you'd like to go, and why wouldn't you? This movie looks awesome, and you get to walk the red carpet down there at Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Well, you don't get to walk the red carpet.
Well, you'll see it.
You'll see other people.
You'll get to clean the red carpet, yes, after other people have walked down.
Yes.
You can call right now, 1-800-520-1067. First five callers get a pair of passes to the Hansel and Gretel red carpet premiere. Today's celebrity birthdays: Jason Segel is 33 years old today. Jay Chou played Cato, of course, in the Green Hornet movie with Seth Rogen, is 34 years old. Dave Attell, very funny comedian, turns 48. Kevin Costner is 58 years old today. And Jonathan Davis of Korn is 42 years old today. You really should go to Vegas, Kevin, with some sort of impersonator's act, because you are uncanny when you do that Jonathan Davis impersonation.
I really am dead on.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
All right, let's play that song. On Tuesday mornings, Kevin and Bean Show, Paramore will be in the studio with a brand new song. Paramore on Tuesday morning. Join us then, won't you? Have a great weekend.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
You want them? We've got them.
Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
My taste buds is going wild.
Roll another one.
The price is wrong, bitch.
Just like the other one.
What the fuck about Mikey?
This seems to be about to quit.
Have you been introduced to Kevin?
No, which one's Kevin?
He's here on a special work program. He's slow, you know, in his brain.
Oh, good for you guys.
Yeah.
Roll another one.
B-hole has it over the A-hole for sure.
Just like the other one.
Holy mackerel.
Seems to be about to end.
Yeah, boy.
I don't have another cent.
What the fuck about Mikey Ball?
But don't bogart that joint.
Everything's better with Megan Fox, right?
Just passing around.
Hello, ladies. How are you? Fantastic.
Hey, Muggs, you're going to have to tell me on the air if it's time to go, because I hear nothing.
Time to go.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
So if you're confused about what I'm saying, listen very carefully. I quit this bitch.
Hey, guys. Nice job by you. Better job by me.